This is Audible.
Imogen's Baby, a short story by Amanda Prowse, narrated by Kathleen McCarran. I don't remember one defining moment when I held a child or heard one cry and felt my womb pulse with longing. Nothing like that. It's just always been there, that desire to become a mum, like other aspects of my life that have always been there. Being proud of being a Scot, hating cheese or wanting to live in a noisy community, a bustling street. I always have, for as long as I can remember. I love the signs of life, the constant squall and bustle of activity and the way it makes me feel, as if I'm connected to a bigger world, to people. That's very important to me. So, yes, I think there has always been that need. I was like lots of other little girls. When not engaging in rough and tumble, I'd tenderly coo to my dolly and rock her to sleep. Her name was Baby Jean, and I'd make up her crib and place her gently inside, tiptoeing out of the room so as not to wake her. Yet, I was just like every other little girl. I dreamt of becoming a mummy. Not that my mum, Isla, ever encouraged me in any way. Not like some mums who buy you a penny and start your training with mini hoovers and tiny saucepans, telling you to cook tea for your imaginary husband who's out at work. God, that's such an outdated mode. But nonetheless, I know some of my own friends who do this with their toddler daughters even now. But with or without my mum's encouragement, it was as if there was something hardwired into my DNA, an inbuilt need. I never considered becoming a parent might not be an option for me, ever. Even though my own birth was, let's say, tricky, and the tales from that fateful day have been bandied about more than a dozen times, I know all the gory details. Despite this, I've always been willing to do whatever it takes to fulfil my dream, and why not? I don't think being single should be a barrier, not in this day and age, when so many marriages end in divorce and couples who start off with the best intentions can still end up as single parents. What does it matter? So long as that child is loved and cared for. More and more people are choosing not to marry, and that's fine too. For me, the most important relationship is the one I will have with my child. I'll keep him or her safe. I'll love my child unconditionally, and I will help it to become the best citizen of the planet that it can possibly be. What is it they say? You don't know until you try. Well, I am trying. I'm trying very hard, and I'm not going to give up without a fight. I will keep on until all options have been exhausted, because that's me, Imogen. I'm a girl who fought for survival on her first day on the earth, and sometimes, more so recently in fact, it feels like I have been fighting every day since. That's it, really. Chapter 1, May 1989. Isla lay in her side, staring into the semi-darkness of the small room. She pulled the sheet up over her shoulder and wriggled her head against the pillow, trying to get comfortable. The mattress was too hard, and the regular squeak of shoes pacing the linoleum floor outside, along with the beeps and bells of machinery in the adjoining rooms, meant her sleep had been disturbed. Her throat was sore and her eyes ached from all the crying. She was exhausted by it and sick of it, this never-ending well of tears. She screwed her eyes shut, trying to escape into the oblivion of sleep. It was, as ever, elusive. It had been another bad night. Along with her physical discomforts, nightmares and jumbled thoughts which wrenched her from her sleep, she pictured her mum Mary's face when she'd heard the sad news a couple of weeks back. She had been sorry, yes, but her words of comfort were tinged with a tiny glint of, "I told you so," thrown in for good measure. It was this sliver of self-justification, mirroring the night Isla had broken the news of her pregnancy, when the whole of Pilton must have covered their ears at her mum's yelling that was more than she could bear. Every time she thought about her little girl, the tears sprang anew. This seemed to be the instant reaction whenever she considered her daughter's future. Upon discovering her pregnancy, and after the initial stages of disbelief and shock, Isla had dreamt of all the things they would do together. This baby and she would get their own place. They'd enjoy holidays by the sea, walks in the park, the first school play, and the creation of clumsy, colourful paintings to adorn the kitchen walls. It was these vivid images of herself with a rosy-cheeked cherub on her lap that had given Isla the courage to tell her mum and dad, admitting in the process that not only had she and Duncan Maguire, the boy from two doors down, had sex, but they had also been a little lax about contraception. She'd won her parents over by painting them similar pictures of the future, ones that involved them and their grandchild, ripping open gifts on Christmas Day, playing in the snow on their trips up to the Cairngorms, or listening to the tiny child recite their lines in the first school assembly they attended. How lovely would it be to have a grandchild, a baby, while their own youngest was only 10? And who knew? It might be a little girl, to give a bit of balance to a family dominated by rowdy boys, 4 children in all, of whom Isla was the eldest child and the only girl. She bit her lip, tears threatening again. It was hard for her to picture any of these things now. Instead, if she looked towards the future, all she could see was a deep, dark hole into which all her hopes and dreams had tumbled. She worried that Duncan would no longer feel the same, fearing that their plans and all the promises he had made on cold, foggy nights would disappear down the deep, dark hole too. How long would he stick around? Of one thing she was sure, she didn't want him to be with her for any reason other than love. The idea of him feeling tied to her through duty was more than she could bear. If that was the case, she would rather be alone. The future felt bleak, and if she was honest, she didn't know if she had the strength to cope. It wasn't fair.
"Let's let the day in, shall we?"
The chubby nurse bustled into the room and marched over to the window. She then twisted the rod that split the Venetian blinds, sending a fractured white light across the cold blue flooring. She cracked the window open just enough to let the buzz of traffic creeping along the Crewe Road South filter into the room. Isla sat up in bed and blinked. She'd been thinking about their annual family holiday. Along with cousins, aunts and any neighbours who fancied the jaunt, the high-spirited group set off in a convoy of cars and vans with enough camping equipment to house an army. Rain or shine, for 1 week of the summer, they played footy, built fires, barbecued fish, and let marshmallows blacken over the coals as they dangled from twigs, while they all giggled at nothing in particular, and berated their daddy en masse for the post-supper farts that he denied. She was imagining herself swimming in the loch, something she'd never done in real life, preferring instead to dangle her feet in the water from a dock, to feel the warmth of the sun on her skin as it tried in vain to join up her numerous freckles. Her parents, Mary and Jim, and brothers, would heckle from the depths as they laughed and trod water with droplets shining like diamonds on their long, soft lashes, and plastering their strawberry blonde-coloured hair to their pale scalps.
"Come in, you big dafty! Isla, come on, it's lovely!" they'd call,
but there she stayed, rooted to the spot, too afraid of the sea monsters and kelpies that she was convinced lurked beneath the dappled surface. One of the younger boys, Ewan or Kurt, would then call her name.
"Isla! Help! Isla! It's got me!"
before disappearing suddenly under the water, as if grabbed by the feet, only to break the surface seconds later, spluttering, laughing and high-fiving whoever was in striking distance.
"Oh, leave my wee girl alone," Mary would intervene, winking at her daughter and turning to laugh with her sons.
What had her gran called it? Running with the fox and chasing with the hounds. Isla's mum had it down to a fine art. She went through life neither offending nor pleasing to any great degree. In her daydreams, Isla had been confident, jumping with arms aloft into the cool loch, enjoying the feeling as she dived into a different world, pulling through the water with deft strokes that motored her along. She then lay on her back, staring at the sky, her body straight and her feet kicking as her long, pale arms worked overhead, propelling her into the centre of the loch, which in this ethereal world held no terrors for her. She wished she could be as fearless in real life, wished she wasn't so afraid. How she would love to dive in. Isla had thought that becoming a mum might have given her courage and the confidence to strike out. That idea now seemed laughable.
"Did you get much sleep?"
The nurse pulled the top blanket over the bed, making it taut before tucking it around Isla's legs.
"A little bit,"
she whispered, rubbing at her pale eyelids that felt full of grit, unwilling to admit that she'd cried into her pillow until the early hours, struggling to breathe through the waves of fear that battered her senses and flooded her mind.
"I can't do this. this. I can't. I don't know how I'll cope. My mum was right. I can't do this.
Forgetting she was still recovering from the emergency caesarean, she pulled her knees up to her chest, planting her feet on the mattress before wincing and carefully sliding them flat against the white sheet. Shit, she murmured, through a mouth contorted by a sudden flash of pain. You're going to have to be careful. It's those little movements, small things that can catch you unawares. The nurse filled the plastic beaker with water from the tap and placed it on the nightstand. Isla nodded. That's the story of my life. Small things catching me unawares.
Do you need anything for the pain right now?
The nurse spoke louder than Isla was comfortable with. Did she not know how stressful it was to have the baby wake and start crying? Or how long it took to get her off to sleep again? Isla's eyes darted towards the plastic bassinet by the side of her bed. Thankfully, the baby didn't stir. She shook her head. She wasn't in pain. Not physically. Not anymore. Her surgery had dulled to an inconvenience. Gone was the sharp tug of trying to stand tall, and the nervous hesitation when she had to pee. It was only these small, ill-considered movements that took her breath away.
No, I'm fine, she mouthed, letting her eyes dart towards the baby. Oh, don't you worry about her waking, the nurse laughed. Have you ever listened to what goes on inside a stomach? It's a proper racket. That gorgeous little miss has been surrounded by noise, burps, shouts, hiccups, and your very loud heartbeat for the last 9 months. My dulcet tones aren't going to disturb her, she chuckled. In fact, in my experience, they quite like a bit of background noise. My eldest used to nod off to the sound of the Hoover, which is funny as he's 16 now and I don't think he even knows what it looks like. But that's the problem. She wasn't surrounded by noise for 9 months. She was born too soon, at just a little over 23 weeks, and only able to come home today, finally. Isla smiled, knowing the woman was trying to be nice. Are you all set then? It's a big day for you. Again, the nurse boomed. I think so. She nodded, thankful once more for all the medical team had done for her and her new baby girl, unable to forget the hurried surgery, the feeling of panic in the air, the sight of her tiny baby lifted lifeless and floppy from her body as machines beat loudly and alarms sounded, and voices were raised with an edge of adrenaline-fueled tension to them that no years of practice could erase. She's a pretty little thing, the nurse cooed.
Yep, takes after her mum,
Isla laughed. Then she'll do just fine.
Isla looked around, knowing that this would be the last morning she would spend within the confines of this little space. And weirdly, as desperate as she was to get home, back to her mum's, she was also sick with nerves about having to leave its security, where an expert lurked around every corner.
It's odd, isn't it, that this room is so full of significance for me. These four walls, this bed, the place where my daughter was born, and yet there'll be another baby born here tomorrow, or even later today, and for those few hours it will be their special place.
That's kind of how it works. A bit of a production line.
The nurse coughed, as if remembering that this woman was a customer of sorts.
I hope, of course, that it never felt like a production line. I hope that you've had a good experience here.
Isla nodded. She had.
It'll be okay, you know.
The nurse smiled at her reassuringly. Isla nodded again. Will it? She wished she could be so certain. A thought popped into her head. An idea she had had about her child becoming successful and travelling around Europe, visiting all the cities that Isla herself had yet to make it to. And she did so by car, driving around in an open-topped Beetle. But there'd be no driving. Not for her little girl. Isla closed her eyes and sank back on the pillow, finally feeling the pull of sleep. She decided to nap when the nurse had finished her pottering.
As if on cue, the baby let out a tiny mewling noise, calling from her crib. Isla instinctively pulled back the covers and swung her legs gently around in an arc, as she had been instructed. Lifting her daughter from the crib, she cradled her in one crooked arm.
Morning, little one. Morning, darling, she cooed.
Have you named her yet? The nurse asked, curious.
Imogen. She's called Imogen.
Well, that's a lovely name and one that'll carry her through life. You know she can be anything she wants with a name like that.
Isla stared at the woman, swallowing the thought that her name wouldn't be the thing that held Imogen back.
Is there anything you want to ask me? I know you have had plenty of instruction and you're a dab hand at the bathing, nappies, feeding and whatnot. Plus you have the numbers of your designated health visitor and they're on hand 24/7.
Yes,
Isla nodded. She had plenty of names, plenty of numbers, but she knew that wouldn't help in the early hours when her mind ran riot and she felt like crumbling.
Is there anything that's worrying you right now?
The nurse sat on the chair next to the bed and folded her hands in her lap, like a friend settling down for a cuppa. Isla placed her little finger in her daughter's mouth. Her bottle would be along any minute.
I was thinking about something last night before I fell asleep.
Uh-huh, the nurse leant forward.
How
what, hen?
How will she know I'm her mum? How will she know it's me if she doesn't know what I look like? If she can ever see me?
Isla swallowed the tears that threatened again and focused on her daughter's closed lids, where fully functioning eyes would have been had she stayed nestled inside the noisy womb for just a little bit longer. The nurse gave a small laugh as the door behind them creaked open. She placed her finger over her lips.
"Shh,"
she whispered, indicating to the person hovering the doorway to wait, before turning back to Isla on the bed and instructing,
"Close your eyes, tight."
She did as she was told.
"Who just arrived?"
"What?"
Isla was confused.
"Come on, without looking and without our guest making a sound."
The nurse spoke in the direction of the door, turning it into an instruction.
"Who is it standing in the doorway?"
Isla cocked her head, concentrated and smiled, inhaling the scent that had arrived with the visitor.
It's my boyfriend. It's Duncan."
"How do you know?"
the nurse whispered, looking from the man in the doorway back to her patient. Isla beamed.
I can feel it's him. I can feel him."
"Exactly,"
the nurse whispered, as she tiptoed from the room. Duncan stepped forward and rested his large hand on Isla's shoulder. She placed her cheek against the back of it and opened her eyes, something her wee girl would never be able to do.
"I didn't know if you'd be coming in,"
she smiled. Duncan's voice was gruff with emotion.
"Of course. I love you, Isla, and I love our daughter, and who knows what's going to happen. Not you, not me, but that's got to be the best start, right?"
Chapter 2, May 1992.
"Have you got any matches, Dunk?"
"My arse, your face?"
Duncan laughed into his beard and elbowed his mate Harry in the ribs.
"Charming! I cannot imagine talking in front of my mother-in-law like that."
Isla's mum, Mary, tutted and then winked at him to show she got the joke. All was well.
"And anyways, I'm not your son-in-law, not officially, though not for lack of asking. I think she's trying me out to see if I'm good enough for wedding. We are still actually living in sin, in case you hadn't noticed,"
Duncan announced loudly, playing to the crowd of one as Harry felt his face colour.
"Oh, I have noticed, Duncan Maguire, and for the love of God, I don't need reminding."
Mary patted her bleached hair and went to rifle in the kitchen drawer. She was in need of a box of matches to light the candles on her granddaughter's Princess Belle birthday cake.
"Try Ewan. He smokes, you know, in secret,"
Duncan shouted after her. His mate snorted into his pint and sprayed the living room carpet with a sticky foam. They might have been old enough to drink, and for one of them to be a dad, but they were still teenage boys at heart when a rude joke and the chance to make the others snort laughter into their beer was the mark of a good time.
"Does he indeed?"
Mary narrowed her eyes towards the garden where her 14-year-old son stood by the edge of the bouncy castle, his job to ensure that no toddler fell out, got injured or trampled on. She stepped through the back door of the kitchen and marched across the hard mud and balding grass, where Mitzi the Staffy wore away any new growth with her frantic digging, and the football constantly being kicked around the small space finished the job. Ewan stood with his back to the house, one hand leaning on the inflated wall. Mary tapped her son on the shoulder. He reeled around to face her. Both were taken by surprise, he by the sudden appearance of his irate mother, and she by the tears that filled the eyes of her teenage boy.
"What on earth's the matter, love?"
she cooed, as her previous spike of anger and desire to interrogate him evaporated.
"Nothing,"
He drew breath sharply, embarrassed, and swiped at his face with the back of his sleeve.
Well, it sure doesn't look like nothing.
Ewan shook his head.
I just wish...
Just wish what?
She placed her hand on his arm.
I just wish she could see for one day, like the other kids. It's so unfair, Mum.
He looked back towards the bouncy castle where Imogen jumped high in the air, squealing as she landed, arms and legs entangled with the other children's. They were all of them clambering and giggling, each trying to stand on the wobbly base before being pulled back down by other grabbing hands in search of stability, rendered weak by the hilarity of the absurd situation in which they found themselves.
She's having the time of her little life, Mary smiled.
Aye, but she just asked me what a dress is like,
Ewan said, swallowing hard.
And I didn't know what to say because every description I could think of was a colour or a comparison, all useless to her. She doesn't know pink. She doesn't know marshmallow. I find it hard.
What's going on?
Isla shouted. Neither of them had heard her approach.
Why are you upset? Is she hurt?
Without waiting for her little brother's reply, she placed her hands on her hips and began shouting into the Malay,
Imogen! Emmy! Come out this minute before you get your head kicked in by one of those boys. I mean it. Come off now.
She's fine, Isla. She's having the time of her life. Mary tried to placate her, placing her hand on her daughter's forearm. This was Isla's stock response, to remove Imogen from any potential danger, to cushion her from life, to keep her safe.
She's under a ton of kids.
Isla pointed at the jumble of arms and legs.
How do you know she's having the time of her life? She might be suffocating. Imogen, I mean it, come out right now, she screamed.
She looked at her mother.
Have you seen the size of that Gary Bridewell? He could squash her or knock her out.
Gradually heeding the instruction, the birthday girl wiggled free from the crush. A froth of pale pink tulle and netting gathered around her and made her way to the edge of the castle.
What's up, Mum?
She tilted her head to one side, laughing every time a child behind her jumped, sending her teetering this way and that like a drunk.
I don't want you to get hurt,
Isla explained.
I'm not hurt. It's brilliant,
Imogen exclaimed, before hurling herself back into the throng, unaware and uncaring that some of the children she bounced and fought with were twice her age and size. Her giggles could be heard above the yells. Isla retrieved the large bowl of sweets that she had plonked on the floor and began handing them out. She caught sight of her little brother's face.
What's up then, Ewan? Are you okay?
Mary ruffled his hair.
He's just having a moment, wishing that Emmy could see her dress.
Oh, you lovely thing.
Isla smiled at him.
It's funny, isn't it, how it's the little things that get you.
I was washing her hair in the bath the other day. Isla pictured the moment, herself elbow-deep in suds as she massaged the foam into her little girl's scalp, then ducking as her daughter splashed in the bath, showering her in bubbles.
Imogen asked me to describe the bubbles. I did my best, and then we got talking, so I asked her what she thought about the world, and she told me it was big and noisy, and she's right, it is. And then she told me she thought it was the colour of laughing and happy. How great is that? Big and noisy and the colour of happy. Really, that's all you need. Anything else is just detail.
She winked at her kind little brother before returning her attention to her daughter, diving in and out of the gang of children littering the floor of the bouncy castle.
Imogen's fine, you know.
Mary placed her hand on her daughter's arm.
You have to let her be.
I know.
Isla rummaged in the bowl of sweets.
I can't help it, though. I feel afraid for her. I want to wrap her up and hold her tight forever.
All mums feel that way. Mary looked at Ewan, her sensitive, secret smoker of a son.
Yes, but I have better reason than most, don't I?
Isla held her mum's gaze.
It's a reason, aye. But whether it's better or stronger than anyone else's, I don't know. But I do know that you have to let her have the freedom to fly. Only then will she come home to roost. You have to have more faith, Isla. For God's sake, let her be. And then do us all a favour and marry that boy of yours.
Emmy's being mean! She just shoved me!
Duncan's wee cousin yelled. Gary Bridewell laughed loudly.
Shove her back! Twice as hard!
Was his advice.
Mary reached in and grabbed her granddaughter by the arm. Be nice, Emmy. Remember, you catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar.
Her gran patted her head.
Ewan bent close, enabling him to whisper conspiratorially. Imogen could smell his soap, a sweet scent that clung to his skin and surrounded him in a slightly sickly aura.
Aye, what your gran says is true enough, Imogen. But don't forget that when you come across a nasty wee wasp, sometimes you have to swat the irritating bastard.
He chuckled before wrapping her in a fierce but brief hug. Imogen smiled, happy to be held in this warm embrace, and equally embarrassed by her uncle's use of a curse. She wriggled free and made her way back into the centre of the fray.
Ow!
Gary Bridewell, the great lump of a lad, jumped from the bouncy castle, holding his hand over his face. A thin trickle of blood seeped from beneath his cupped palm.
Good God, Gary, what have you done?
Isla rushed forward and prized the boy's fingers from his face.
Imogen kicked me in the head, he wailed.
Isla looked at her mum and laughed.
Chapter 3. Present Day. Imogen sidled onto a padded bench in Café Chocolat and placed her handbag in the space beside her, along with her cane. She slid the screen on her mobile phone and held it up to her ear. She had a new message. The text-to-voice app spoke its robotic tone in her ear.
Your appointment for next Thursday with Dr. Randolph is confirmed for 4 p.m. We look forward to seeing you then.
Who are you talking to?
Imogen looked up at the sound of Jenny's voice. It was slightly laboured, out of breath, as if she'd been rushing. Imogen closed her phone.
No one.
I was listening to a text. Have you been running?
No. Just didn't want to be late, so I legged it up the escalator.
Jenny huffed as she sat down opposite her friend.
You smell nice.
Imogen inhaled the scent, liking the earthy notes that danced up her nose like fragrant music.
Do you know you're the only one who ever notices? And yes, it's new. Beyoncé's Heat.
Oh, hoping to get Shay a bit hot under the collar?
That'll be the day, Jenny sighed. The actual Beyoncé could prance around the front room naked, but if the footy's on, I wouldn't fancy her chances much. Unless she brought a kebab with her, of course, that might just swing it.
The two girls laughed.
You're not still replaying Logan's message, are you? Jenny sighed.
No,
Imogen answered, a little more indignant than she should have been, embarrassed by the fact that she had done just that earlier in the day.
I'm so over him. You're right, anyone who doesn't want to be with me is not someone I want to be with.
That's my girl.
Jenny sounded proud of her.
In fact, I've started to feel angry. I can't even think of that word you used without getting mad.
What word?
Jenny teased.
You know the one.
Imogen smiled, refusing to rise to the bait.
Oh, you mean when he said, I think it's best we go our separate ways. I can't cope with the liability.
The two girls said together, then giggled in unison at this admission made by Imogen weeks ago.
I mean, for God's sake, Jen, there's him calling me that, and it's him who still lives under his mother's roof, with her wiping his nose for him every 5 minutes.
You're better off without him, mate. Bloke's an arsehole.
Yes, but an arsehole I quite liked, and an arsehole who left me because he couldn't cope.
Imogen decided to keep this to herself.
What'll we have?
Imogen listened as her friend flexed the stiff cardboard of the menu.
Usual for me, hot chocolate. With fresh cream and extra marshmallows?
Jenny asked, smiling.
Of course. You all right, honey? You look a bit, I don't know, nervous.
Her friend knew Imogen back to front and inside out, could tell from her body language or the slightest nuance of her behaviour when something was amiss.
I guess I am a bit. Oh, God, what have you done? What madness are you embarking on now? This isn't another bloody holiday you've booked, is it? Or some stupid stunt? The last time you looked like this, you were about to go abseiling for that charity day. I nearly shat myself just thinking about it. And watching you was worse.
Imogen laughed.
No, nothing like that. And I still don't know what all the fuss was about. I wasn't even scared.
That, mate, was because you couldn't see that you were 150 feet from the ground with just a wee bit of rope keeping you from going splat.
Jenny shuddered at the memory.
You might be right.
There was a pause while Imogen considered how best to continue.
I do want to tell you something.
She swallowed nervously.
Oh, for God's sake, spit it out. The suspense is killing me. Jenny banged the table. Imogen jumped, and the old couple on the next table looked up. I want to have a baby.
You what?
Jenny thought she might have misheard. I want to be a mum, Jen. I really do. I want to have a baby. Imogen smiled and listened out for her friend's response. There was a silent interlude while Jenny processed her friend's words, and Imogen sat, waiting. If they hadn't been best friends, it might have been awkward.
For real?
Jenny needed it confirming. Imogen nodded.
Fucking hell. I think I preferred you jumping out of buildings on a bit of chewing gum.
Both girls laughed with relief at the joke that broke the tension and at the mental image it created.
It's true, Jen. I want this more than anything.
Imogen's voice was low and serious sounding.
How long have you felt like this?
Imogen shrugged. How long had she had the desire, the need, to hold her baby in her arms?
Always, really. I always thought I'd be a mum eventually.
Jenny exhaled, letting out a deep breath. She drummed her fingertips on the tabletop.
Well, yes, eventually, but how can I put this? You don't have a fella, and the last time I checked, they were quite important in the whole process.
So that's where I've been going wrong.
Imogen laughed.
I know, but there are ways around it. Oh, God, no immaculate conception. Have you been listening to Father Frank?
Imogen chuckled again.
No,
but there are clinics. I'm going to see a doctor next Thursday to talk about IUI.
God, you're serious?
Yes. Imogen felt her smile slip. She wanted support, reassurance, not to have to convince her mate that this wasn't some kind of wind-up.
Christ, Emmy, I think this might be madness.
Jen's tone was level.
Don't say that.
I've known you since we were five, and I've never lied to you, and I'm not about to start. I don't know how you'd cope with a baby, and I worry that it'll be too much for you.
For God's sake, do you know me at all?
When have I not coped? When have I ever failed at anything I've tried to do?
Imogen thought of the day she and Jenny had waited patiently in line for their turn at archery on a school trip. She recalled the way the ranger had gently placed his hand on her arm, saying,
"Are you sure you're wanting a go?"
His tone part condescending, part concerned. Imogen had turned her head towards him.
"Course I'm wanting a go," she'd yelled. "What do you think I'm standing in the queue for?"
She smiled at the memory.
"I do the things that everyone else does without a second thought. And you've always supported me, always told me that the last thing people notice about me is that I can't see. And now you're giving me this crap."
She felt her bottom lip start to tremble. Jenny was silent.
"That's because I've always thought you can do anything. But this?"
Imogen heard her friend's voice change direction, as if she was speaking to the floor.
"This is something much bigger than going bungee jumping or flying off on holiday on your own.
Do you think I don't know that?"
Imogen fought to keep the tears from her voice. The waitress padded over. Imogen heard the flip of her pad and the scratch of her pen on the paper.
"What'll it be, ladies?" "I'll take a tea."
Jenny smiled at her.
"And for you, darling?"
the kindly woman asked as she scribbled. Imogen shook her head. "Nothing for me, thanks. I have to go." She felt her cheeks flush and a horrible, hot, swarmy feeling wash over her.
"I thought you were having a hot chocolate,"
Jenny sighed. Imogen bent to the right and felt for her cane and her bag.
"I don't feel like it, Jen."
"Oh, don't be like that."
"Like what?"
Imogen snapped.
"You know, a bit off with me just because you don't like my response."
"You're right, I don't. Because your reaction makes it sound as if I haven't considered all the consequences."
"Do you seriously think I don't know how hard it might be? But it's hard for all new mums, and that's what I want to be, just another new mum. I thought you of all people would get it."
Imogen shuffled along the bench seat and squeezed out between the tables. Using her uncanny knack of sensing the objects in her path and navigating around them expertly, Mikey, an old boyfriend, used to call her Batgirl because of this very talent.
"It's no that, Emmy."
Jenny's voice tailed off.
"What is it then?"
she said curtly, fastening her coat buttons, wanting to leave.
I just don't think it's fair on a baby."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean just that. Aren't you worried that the little one will end up doing more than a child should? That it might end up looking after you?"
Imogen couldn't find the words. Her heart beat too fast for comfort, and her pulse raced.
She felt quite light-headed.
It's not like you've got a partner who could help in any way. I'm afraid it might not be the right thing to do. I'm only saying what I think.
Jen's voice trailed off. Imogen abandoned her buttons and turned her head in the direction of her friend.
Do you know what, Jen? I think you should look a bit closer to home. Your mum's a junkie and yet she had 5 kids. And your own life's a bloody mess and there's you and Shay hanging onto your relationship by a thread. And you think my baby would have it bad? I have a safe, stable home with enough love to keep a child happy and the wherewithal to provide for it.
Imogen walked across the cafe towards the door. Jenny hung her head, stung by her friend's words and shocked by the way their discussion had deteriorated into this exchange. She expected it with Shay, but with Imogen? Never. Then Jenny did what she did best. Came out fighting.
Yes, you're right. My childhood was less than perfect. That's how I know what it's like to have a mum that you can't rely on. A mum who's preoccupied by her own struggle. It's not fair on a child.
Imogen noticed the tremor in her friend's voice. She was clearly hating their first serious altercation as much as Imogen was. But that aside, her words cut just the same. Jenny still wasn't finished.
And how dare you say that about Shay and me? I don't know what the hell's got into you, but you need to take a look at yourself.
Imogen shook her head at the irony of her friend's ill-considered comment and left. Jenny's words were still ringing in Imogen's head into the early hours. It wasn't only falling out with her best friend that had unsettled her so, leaving her feeling out of sorts and a little confused. Self-doubt had crept into her mind too, causing her to question her own motives. She lay in bed, feeling on the bedside table for her glass of water from which she sipped, imagining a tiny baby asleep by her side in a cot. Imogen smiled. Even the thought cheered her.
I can do this. I know I can.
It was her last thought before falling asleep. The next day, on her way to see her parents, Imogen thought about the quarrel with Jenny, and her stomach churned at the prospect of losing her best friend. Even the thought of not having her to turn to made her feel sick. As the bus drove to her parents' house, Imogen was feeling anxious.
How's my wee girl doing?
Duncan kissed the top of her head before taking a chair at the kitchen table.
Great, thanks, Dad.
She sat down with him at the table, and he poured her some tea.
I'll just get your gran settled and then I'll be back.
Isla touched her daughter's arm before going into the next room. She was carrying a small floral laminated tray on which teetered tea in a china cup and a matching side plate with a slice of bread and butter and 2 Garibaldi biscuits on it. When she returned, Isla took the seat next to her daughter.
Did your dad read you Ewan's letter?
Imogen's uncle had written from Canada, where he'd been living for the best part of 10 years.
No.
She shook her head and lifted her mug in both hands, tentatively bringing the hot liquid towards her mouth, testing the temperature against her bottom lip before taking a sip.
I'll fetch it in a bit. He's doing great. Happy as Larry.
Her mum yawned, switching between shifts at the Krispy Kreme donut factory always took its toll.
I don't know who this Larry is, but half his luck. Does he ever have a bad day?
Duncan chortled, wheezing with laughter.
Doubt it.
Imogen heard the familiar mix of love and joviality with which her mum had addressed her dad for as long as she could remember. It made her happy, always, and she could see that when a relationship worked, it was a lovely way to live. Her parents had married when Imogen had been 5. Her mum had said she'd wanted to be sure. It made them all laugh even now, but Imogen knew that she wasn't prepared to watch the years pass by, waiting to find her Mr. Right. Or worse, try to hang on to someone like Logan, who resented her disability and could only hurt her. No, she wanted to crack on with the important job of having a baby.
I met Jen yesterday in town, she said. Oh, right, how is she? I saw her mum a couple of weeks back. She seems to be doing better.
We had a bit of a row, actually. Imogen felt her shoulders sag. The fact that they had fallen out was still shocking to her.
Never! You two are as thick as thieves, always have been. What on earth is there to fall out over?
The fact that her mum's voice had gone up a couple of octaves revealed that she was equally surprised. Imogen placed the mug on the table and pushed her hair back from her face. I had some news for her and I thought she'd support me.
She's always supported you, her mum interrupted. She's your partner in crime, that one.
Yes, I know, but not this time, apparently. Imogen swallowed.
What was your news?
Her dad whispered. He was not a man who enjoyed change, and Imogen knew he'd be running through all the dire possibilities in his head. Duncan was happiest knowing that his routine was unchallenged, and his family and friends all lived within strolling distance. Imogen felt their breath coming in her direction, and the silent crackle of anticipation in the air. I told her I wanted to have a baby.
Well, of course you want to have a baby. You've said so before, and it's a shame things didn't work out with Logan. But when the time is right, you'll meet someone else and it'll happen.
Isla laughed with relief, having anticipated bad news, as she often did.
No, Mum.
It was Imogen's turn to interrupt, unwilling to rake over the reasons why things hadn't worked out with funny, amiable Logan, who'd been polite to her mum, taken an interest in her dad, and had on occasion treated Imogen herself like a child who needed minding, resenting every moment and fearful of a future where she might depend on him more. It still hurt to recall it.
Not when I meet someone. Now. The time is right for me and I'm taking steps to make it happen. I'm going to see a doctor about having IUI. My GP says there's no reason the NHS would fund it. It's not as if I have tried to conceive and can't. It's just that I want to get pregnant and this is the best way for me. That's fair enough. I have the money saved for a couple of shots at the title and so I'm going to take it.
Her parents were silent. She took a sip of her tea and heard her mum swallow.
So, is anyone going to say anything?
Asked Imogen. Her dad cleared his throat.
What did you and Jen fall out over? I don't understand.
Imogen bit her lip. It wasn't easy for her to repeat her friend's remarks. She pretty much said that she didn't think it was a good idea and that it wasn't fair on the child. Her parents remained quiet. She sat up straight and took a deep breath.
Am I to take it from your silence that you agree with Jenny?
She tried to keep the emotion from her voice, keep her distress in check. Isla reached across the table and held her daughter's hand. Imogen heard the unmistakable sound of her weeping.
Why are you crying?
She whispered.
I'm crying because I'm happy for you. I'm proud of you. And because you and Jen are closer than sisters and I don't like the idea of you having a fallout.
Her dad's chair scraped across the floor and Imogen heard him rip sheets of kitchen roll from the stand on which it lived and hand them to his wife before resuming his seat. Isla blew her nose into the tissue.
We are always here for you, love. No matter what, always. And we'll support you through this, but I do think I might be a tad young to be a granny.
That's what your mum said too, as I recall,
Duncan said into his mug.
Chapter 4.
Right.
Imogen sat up straight at the sound of this one-word greeting, issued as the man blustered into the room. She heard the slam of the door behind him. It made her jump. She could tell a lot about people and their understanding of her condition by their awareness of the impact sound had on her. The clues lay in small things, like whether they thought to announce themselves or chat a bit more, giving her at least the chance to process who this was and their intention and mood. Introductory words did that for her, and were vital in the same way that a first visual impression was for the sighted. Imogen was skilled at discerning the way people felt from the smallest of clues, a slight foreshortening of a consonant in an otherwise jolly introduction, for instance, was often a clue to veiled aggression, and laboured sighs with a faint hum between words could signal pain, but were usually the result of sadness. People were so used to painting on a smile to fool the eye that they often forgot to disguise the voice too, or to measure their breathing or monitor their laughter, and she had learnt to speak this hidden language. His footfall was heavy. She felt the slight quaking of the wooden floorboards reverberate up the chair legs and send a quiver through her. Or maybe that was just her own nerves. She heard the creak of his chair as he lowered himself behind the desk, heard breathing that was slightly laboured. He was unfit, probably overweight, with a gruffness to his tone that she didn't encounter in anyone youthful. She listened to the spittle paste his tongue to the roof of his mouth, and noticed how it gave way with a slight sucking sound as he began to speak. It made her swallow. Then there was the sound of a computer mouse sliding over a surface, and the flutter of papers as a sticky finger leafed through them. The faint ticking of his watch punctuated his movements. He clearly figured it was okay to multitask. Why not?
It wasn't as if she could see him.
I have looked at your file, Miss Maguire.
the results of the questionnaire you filled in online and the notes of the conversation you had with my assistant, Miss Wells.
Oh, good. The questions had been probing, in depth. Imogen smiled as if she had passed some kind of test and was whizzing through to the next round. He continued as though she hadn't spoken.
Having considered your position very carefully, I'm afraid to say that this has been a wasted journey for you.
He didn't bother with any pleasantries, and the fact that he didn't look at her while he talked spoke volumes. Imogen had keen radar when it came to the way sound reached her ears, able to sense the direction from which it came and in some way assess the objects from which it bounced. He didn't offer her the courtesy of facing her, but instead spoke with head down, looking at his keyboard or notes, distracted. Imogen heard the tap of his fingers on the desktop. She couldn't decide the reason why. Irritation or impatience, maybe both. She sat up straight and gave her practiced smile, the one Jen had helped her with.
Oh, Jen, I wish you were here.
In her early teens, Imogen had sat in front of her friend and given a number of smiles, asking her to judge them. She'd gone through a whole range that went from comfortable, open-mouthed, tongue resting on bottom lip, to a full gurn. After nearly an hour of uncontrollable giggles, Jen had placed her hand on her friend's arm.
Stop! That's the one! That's your best smile!
This had come at the end of a long afternoon spent hanging out. They'd listened to S Club Juniors and sung along badly, before Jen had tried out several hairstyles on her friend, tugging at her scalp as she twisted and back-combed to achieve the desired result.
You have, like, the best hair in the whole wide world, Jen had told her.
Do I? Imogen had beamed.
Seriously, it's so thick and shiny and it always looks like you've just washed it. And it's got that little wave thing going on. Feel mine, it's so thin.
Imogen had done as instructed, letting her friend's wisps of cobweb-like hair slip across her fingers. It felt fragile, insubstantial compared to her own, that had weight and could be twisted around her fingers in a strong knot. She'd shaken her head, liking the feel of her thick mane shivering against her shoulders. Now she recalled the tone of warm affection in her friend's voice as she'd given Imogen such valuable advice, selecting for her the facial expression with which she now greeted anyone she met. It was a hybrid, a cross between the most comfortable, open-mouthed smile, with cheeks relaxed, and a more careful one with a closed mouth and head inverted slightly. What would she have done without a friend like Jenny? It didn't bear thinking about. The doctor continued, quickening his speech as though keen to get this meeting over.
I'm afraid to say that I do not think I am the doctor, nor this the clinic, to help you. This seems to me to be all about you wanting to become a mother, and not something that is necessarily in the best interests of the child. I have to consider the well-being of any baby, and I can't say I think it would be fair to encourage the birth of a child to a parent whose life is already challenging.
Right. Imogen uttered the one word and stopped smiling. She let the fringe of her scarf slip through her fingers, liking the feel of the soft, silky fronds against her skin, and taking comfort from the repeated gesture. She thought again of Jenny's hair, Jenny who'd battled anorexia, Jenny who'd fallen apart when her mum had been in and out of rehab, Jenny who limped from counsellor to counsellor, trying to find someone who might be able to explain her lack of interest in life while she was all the time bending over backwards to accommodate her pig of a husband. I think everyone's life is challenging. I don't think mine is necessarily more so than others.
A snort of laughter preceded his response. I think being blind might be considered a challenge of greater rather than lesser proportions.
Imogen kept her voice level. I guess the question is, in comparison to what? That are quadriplegic mothers and mothers who contract terminal illnesses who would swap with me any day, I bet. Being blind helps to put things into proportion for me. She could sense that he was now facing her, and a silence indicated that all background activity had ceased, as though he'd finally seen fit to give her his full attention.
It's nothing personal.
Dr. Randolph gave an awkward cough, clearly not willing to discuss the matter further. But it is, isn't it? Imogen kept her voice steady.
I'm sorry.
She heard the annoyance in his tone. It is personal. It has to be. And then it began again. The clicking of a mouse, the movement of paper, the slight sigh.
Imogen wasn't done. It is personal because you were talking about me. This is my life, not some hypothetical question or virtual request or result from your questionnaire. I want to become a mum and I am asking you to help me.
And I have explained to you, Miss Maguire, that I do not think I am the doctor nor this the clinic to do so. It's all well and good to talk about quadriplegia or terminal illness, but the reality is life cannot be governed by what may or may not happen. When tragedies occur, that is one thing, but you, in full knowledge of your difficulties, are choosing to bring a child into the world. As I have stated, I don't think it's in the best interest of any child.
Imogen felt by her leg for her satchel and her cane. She gathered the bag onto her lap and looped the leather strap over her head and one arm. She then unfurled her cane and stood up.
Do you know, after careful consideration, I think you're right, Dr. Randolph.
She heard the scrape of his chair and the slight creak of his bones as he stood up. When he spoke, she detected something spicy, like salami on his breath.
Well,
he paused, voice tinged faintly with victory.
I am actually rather glad to hear that.
Imogen gave her practiced smile. Oh no, don't get me wrong. When I say I think you are right, I mean you are not the doctor nor this the clinic to help me. But will it stop me? She turned and walked towards the door, tapping against the wooden floor until she felt the door beneath her cane. Reaching out, she turned the handle and felt a breeze hit her face as the door opened. She turned back in the direction of the man and his big fat desk.
Will it fuck?
With that, she walked off into the hallway, her Uncle Ewan's words ringing in her head.
When you find a nasty wee wasp, sometimes you have to swat the irritating bastard.
Chapter 5. A month later, as Imogen sat in another warm waiting room, her expectations were low. She felt a yawn creep up on her and hid the stretching of her mouth and her tiredness behind her hand, in case anyone watching should think she was anything less than enthusiastic about the project.
Hello, Imogen?
The man stood directly in front of her.
I'm Dr. Hamilton. Sorry we're running late, it's been one of those days.
He laughed.
Actually, I'll let you into a little secret. I always say that, as though what my clients are experiencing is an anomaly, whereas in fact around here it is always one of those days.
Imogen felt her shoulders relax. Dr. Hamilton sounded nice. He sounded kind and human, and this made her feel it might just be possible.
Please, come on through.
He waited for her to stand and touched his arm against hers, allowing her to walk alongside him until he stopped, opened a door and went inside. She followed him. In here it was cooler, the air more pleasant.
Okay, a chair about 2 feet directly in front of you.
Thank you. She'd already sensed the object using her Batgirl skills.
I'm just going to open the window, bring up your details on the computer, and then we can have a good chat. Did you want something to drink? Tea, coffee, soft drink?
She listened to the bar of a window being secured and the rustle of clothing as he took his seat behind the desk. A glass of water would be great. Nerves made her tongue stick like a magnet to the roof of her mouth. He stood up and walked to the back of the room. There was the unmistakable glug of a water cooler. He held the plastic cup against her shaking hand, not letting go until she had it secured.
Are you okay, Imogen?
She nodded. I think so. A bit nervous. Her tummy flipped as she recalled Dr. Randolph's words.
I don't think it's in the best interest of any child.
Of course, but try not to be. Easy for me to say, I know.
Positivity washed over her like a wave.
How have you reached this decision, Imogen? Is it a recent desire you have felt, or has it been something you've wanted for a long time?
Imogen got comfortable in her chair. I don't remember one defining moment when I held a child or heard one cry and felt my womb pulse with longing, nothing like that. She spoke calmly and eloquently, from the heart, telling him about her childhood and how this longing had pretty much always been with her. More so recently, in fact, it feels like I've been fighting every day since. That's it, really. Dr. Hamilton had sat quietly throughout her response.
I see.
He adopted a more business-like tone and her stomach shrank. And then just like that, he delivered the words that made a kind of music play in her ears. The words she had feared she might never hear.
I think we can do this, Imogen. I think we can help you become a mum. Really?
Yes.
He was smiling. She could hear it in his tone.
Really?
I don't know what to say. Except, thank you.
Ah, don't thank me yet. You've got a lot of hard work to put in and it's not an easy road to choose. There will be highs, lows and discomfort. In fact, you might not be thanking me at all once we get started. But I think that's all part of the journey, don't you?
She nodded. There are no guarantees, Imogen. But what is it they say? You don't know until you try?
Yes, that's exactly what they say.
And we will try. Very hard.
Imogen beamed. This felt like it was the start of her adventure. Finally. Finally.
It was happening.
Chapter 6. So how does it work? Isla was curious, casting the question over her shoulder as she filled the kettle.
How does what work?
Granny Mary crept into the kitchen and took a place at the table, pulling her cardigan close as she did so, keen to catch up on whatever she had missed. Isla sighed. She'd been hoping for a private conversation with her daughter, happy that Duncan was out of the house. She'd forgotten her mother might be eager to join in.
The whole injecting a baby thing?
She deliberately kept it vague, already wary of her mother's reaction to the whole idea, not wanting to invite any more loaded statements about her views on single mothers and how it had been so very different in her day. Mary let out a small chuckle.
Oh, goodness me. I don't want to say the wrong thing, Imogen, and you know I love you to the moon and back.
I do. Mary laid her hand on her granddaughter's arm.
But couldn't you just settle down with a nice man and do it the way everyone else does? With a good night out and a bit of a hanky-panky.
Mum, Isla laughed, muttering, here we go, under her breath. Imogen chuckled.
Don't think I haven't thought about that, Gran.
I'm not sure I want a relationship, not right now. But I do know I want to be a mum, and this feels like the best and safest bet for me. The world's a different place now. You don't need to be half of a couple to raise a child successfully.
Well, that's not what I think, but I suppose I might be a bit old-fashioned. What about that Logan boy? He was nice enough.
Aye, but I don't want nice enough. I want fabulous, funny, great. Logan would have driven me nuts with his mahering, and the fact that he was involved unwillingly would have driven us apart eventually. Better it happened sooner rather than later. I don't want to be with anyone who doesn't want to be with me, she repeated the mantra. Besides, if I want to be smothered, I can just come and sit here with yous two. Mary huffed.
I'm curious though, Imogen, what exactly did he do? Put a baby in a test tube and whoosh up your flower?
She spoke with calm confidence as though they were discussing the weather.
For God's sake, Mother.
Isla was quite unsettled to be holding this whole conversation in front of her.
Not quite, Gran, no. Although that sounds easier, Imogen told her.
For the love of God, do we have to go into this much detail?
Isla queried, busying herself in the fridge, searching for something to do. She pulled out a couple of tomatoes and a box of eggs.
Who fancies an omelette?
She said, trying her best to distract them.
I don't need too much detail, but just give me it in a nutshell.
Gran folded her hands in her laps. Both of them ignored Isla's question. Imogen was happy to explain the mechanics to her Gran. It's quite complicated and a bit of a slow process. But in simple terms, they gave me 3 blood tests just to check my hormone levels. And then, when they were at the right point, they gave me another injection that I had to administer myself at home to stimulate the hormones you'd normally get when having hanky-panky. All 3 of them tittered at this use of her Gran's expression.
Is that how the doctor phrased it?
Isla quipped. Yes, Imogen smiled. Then I went back in to have the actual insemination. That's the whooshing test tube and flower bit. And now we just wait. And it's killing me. She placed her elbows on the table and her head in her hands.
How long do you have to wait?
Her Gran asked. 2 weeks. I had another injection after insemination to top up my HCG, which is the pregnancy hormone.
Flippin' heck.
Her mum summed it up quite nicely.
And what happens if this doesn't work? What's plan B?
Isla didn't want to appear negative, but she knew it was her job to prepare her girl for any disappointment that might be lurking around the corner. Imogen raised her head and drew breath.
Then I cry a bit and soldier on.
and I have enough money left for one more round. She tried to sound nonchalant. The two women stared at their daughter and granddaughter in silence. Imogen felt the need to fill the void.
So that's it, in a nutshell.
Well, I'll be,
Granny Mary uttered.
I still think a good night out and a bit of hanky-panky might be easier, and it's good for you too. No offence, Imogen.
None taken, Gran.
Do you feel like it's worked? Do you feel pregnant?
Her Gran asked, with an obvious hint of excitement despite her reservations. Imogen considered this, and in an almost subconscious gesture, placed her hand on her stomach below the table. I don't know. I think I do, but that could just be that I want it so badly. I'm imagining it. The sickness, the boob tenderness and all that stuff. I think it's too soon to tell, and so if I'm feeling these things, then it's probably just a trick of my mind. Isla walked over to the table and hugged her around the shoulders, laying her head against Imogen's. On the other hand, I do have cramp-type period pains, which is either something taking up residence in my womb, or just what it feels like, an impending period, and that's the hardest thing, waiting to see which. Imogen placed her hand over her mum's.
We could do a pregnancy test.
Her gran offered the idea as though it might not have occurred to Imogen. Aye, we could, but because I've had the injections of the pregnancy hormone, that could lead to a false positive, and I don't want to go through that. I'm only just keeping calm as it is. She decided not to confess to the nights of praying, wishing and hoping. Hours that she'd spent lying on her bed, hands on tummy, hoping beyond hope that this little miracle might be occurring inside her, beaming at the thought that it just might be happening this minute, and then sobbing uncontrollably at the thought that it might not.
Tell you what,
Isla huffed, I've gone right off eggs for tea. And all three of them laughed at the wonderful absurdity of the situation. Imogen was still chuckling when an hour later she opened the gate in front of her house and fished for her key in the satchel.
Emmy?
She raised her head, instantly recognising Jenny's voice.
All right,
Imogen smiled. Hearing it brought her nothing but a wonderful sensation of relief.
Thought you might fancy a cup of tea?
Jenny's tone was shy, sheepish. No matter. Imogen was just delighted that her best friend had taken the first step and was now building a bridge between them.
Yep, as long as I get to make it. Your tea tastes like pish,
Imogen laughed.
Firstly, you are the only one who complains about my tea-making skills. And secondly, have you ever tasted pish? How would you know?
And just like that, they were back to normal. Chapter 7. Imogen opened her eyes and closed them again immediately. Her alarm hadn't gone off, but judging by her semi-wakened state, she figured it was about 6:30 a.m. She often did this, infuriatingly cutting her night's sleep short by half an hour or so, while lying in anticipation of the infernal beep of her clock. Lying back on her pillow, she prayed for sleep to return, asking to be whisked back to the sweet oblivion of slumber. For if she could slip into the ethereal world for just a bit longer, then she wouldn't have to admit to the reason that she'd woken or face the reality that had jolted her from sleep on that quiet Tuesday morning. Rolling into a fetal position, she tucked her arms around her shins and sank into the mattress, curled up like a little ball. She whimpered with distress. Who had she been trying to kid? It was going to be harder than she'd thought, simply to soldier on. Sadness came over her in waves as she awoke fully, and had no choice but to accept that the dull ache in her stomach was confirmation she was having her period. Imogen wept, deep, slow tears that were drawn from an inner well of despair. She so desperately wanted to be a mum, and this, a cherished attempt at conception, had failed.
These things happen when they're meant to.
Jenny tried to offer solace as the two girls sat on the bus that would take them into town.
Yep, I know.
All these weeks later, Imogen still found it hard to talk about, and despite their reconciliation, the fact that her best friend had been less than supportive of her plan at first seemed to irritate her more now that the process had failed. Jenny reached up and held Imogen's arm as she took the steep step down from bus to pavement.
Shops first, or hot chocolate?
Jenny queried. Shops, I think. We need to earn it.
What do you need?
Lip gloss and boring stuff like bin bags.
Ooh, the glamorous life we lead,
Jenny laughed.
The two of them sauntered into the chemist's where a young assistant with a badge announcing her trainee status appeared to be on a spring as she constantly bobbed up and down enthusiastically.
"Can I help you?"
she asked, grinning.
"Uh-huh. We are after lip gloss, possibly with a hint of colour."
Jen turned to consult Imogen. "Yes, something warm, not too harsh." Imogen described the effect that she was after the best way she could. The girl turned to Jenny.
"With your colouring, I would recommend orangey tones. You could carry it off with your pale skin."
"Oh, it's not for me, it's for my friend here."
"I see." The girl stared at Imogen. "I didn't realise."
"Didn't realise what?" Imogen was curious.
"Didn't realise you might want to wear makeup."
"Why's that?" She cocked her head, keen to pick up the unspoken nuance behind the girl's words.
I don't know. I just thought that, as you can't see, you might not bother because..."
"Because what?" Jenny prompted.
"Because you don't know what it looks like?"
The girl's enthusiasm for her job was fading fast. Imogen made a noise that was somewhere between a snort of laughter and a chuckle of disbelief. "I like to look my best." She smiled, deciding it wasn't the wee girl's fault. She was curious, that was all.
"Yes, of course."
Imogen heard embarrassment in the rushed response. Jenny leant forward. "I'll tell you what, hen, you'll be wanting to change your own lip colour to puce, it'll match your cheeks." Imogen heard the girl swallow. "Oh, my friend's only teasing. Thing is, you probably wear makeup so that other people see you in a certain way, isn't that right?" asked Imogen.
"Uh-huh, yeah,"
the girl agreed. "Well, it's the same for me. Imagine you didn't have access to a mirror all day. You'd still want to look good, right?" Imogen's tone was soft.
"Yep, it makes me feel more confident."
The girl's voice was small. "There you go." Imogen smiled at her.
"How do you know what colour to go for or how to put your makeup on?"
the girl asked, a little sheepishly. "They're good questions, and the answer is, with a lot of practice. My mum and friends have always told me what suits me or if I've made a howler, been a bit over-generous with the blusher brush." Imogen listened to the girl humph, as if in recognition of similar experiences. "Plus, there are great tutorials online now, so I get to have a lesson, which is good."
"Can you see anything at all? Is it like when I close my eyes and I can see a sort of glow of colour and nearly make out shapes even though my eyes are closed?"
Imogen liked this candid approach. "No, that would be very useful to me, but it's more like trying to look out of your finger when it's behind your back. No sight. At all. Nothing."
"Wow, that must be difficult."
"In some ways."
"Not really.
Not when there are people like you around to help me pick my lip gloss."
"Oh, right, yes."
Taking the hint, the girl went back to her previous perky self as she led the duo down the aisles to find the makeup. Jenny and Imogen made their way outside, laughing together.
"Cheeky mare," Jenny chortled.
"Ah, oh, bless her, she was very young. And to be honest, she's only asking what most people wonder. It's not the strangest thing I've been asked."
"What was then?"
"Oh God, I'm curious now." Jenny pulled in her friend's arm and stepped in close. "God, the list is endless. How do I watch a movie or TV is always a favourite. And I was once asked, how do you know if someone is sexy?"
"How do you know if someone is sexy?"
Jenny laughed.
"Seriously?"
"Yeah, seriously. I mean, it's not like you can look at them and get that whoa moment."
"You are terrible," Imogen laughed.
"Why, Emma?"
Jenny feigned coyness.
"Because you should know that it's not only about how they look, Jen, or it shouldn't be.
It's about that super sensory experience sight is only a small part of. I mean, surely the way Shay looks is just a small part of it for you."
"Christ, Emmy, you're right. I do close my eyes when I want to feel sexy. I have to superimpose Brad Pitt's head onto the useless lump."
The two girls laughed and held on to each other through their giggles.
"So this super sensory thing, is shagging you like sleeping with a superhero? Does it set your spidey senses tingling?"
"Oh my God, Mikey Thompson used to call me Batgirl, maybe that's why."
The two of them laughed even harder. When the laughter subsided, the girls stood facing each other on the pavement with a keen wind blowing from Leith and whipping a chill about their ears.
"I'm sorry, Emmy."
"What for?" Imogen knew to what her friend was alluding, but wanted to have this conversation. needing to know why Jenny had acted that way. There was a slight pause while she considered her words.
For not being more supportive? For feeling a wee bit jealous? You never have to feel jealous of me. I'm your best friend. I know, and I'm sorry. I just always thought I'd have a bairn and you'd be there and it'd be great. And then you were rushing ahead into it and Shay and I still haven't fallen. Oh, Jane, you should talk to me always. I can help you figure things out. I know, although this doesn't take much figuring out. To get up the spout requires shagging.
Not always, Imogen interrupted.
No, good point. Not always. But in our case, it would definitely help. There's a bit of a drought in that area at the moment. But I know how badly you want this, and I'm sorry. Don't say it again. Anyway, the second round seems to have gone pretty well. So far, Imogen had avoided talking to her friend about her recent trip to see Dr. Hamilton, preferring to keep the details to herself. It was as much about self-preservation in case of failure as anything else.
I'm glad. Jenny sounded sincere.
Perhaps you should do as Granny Mary says, have a good night out and then a bit of hanky-panky, Imogen suggested to her friend.
Oh, God, she shuddered. Actually, I think what we might need is some time apart. It's like he doesn't see Emmy, takes me for granted. I'd like to go away for a long weekend and let him miss me. Then maybe when I get back, who knows?
Imogen stopped walking and jumped up and down on the spot, as if she'd borrowed chemist girl's springs.
Let's do it. Let's go away for a weekend. We could go and book it now. Who do you think I am? Kim Kardashian? I can't just pack up my negligee and waltz away for a weekend. I've got work and Shay and I are not exactly flush at the minute. We can do this. I saved up more than I needed for my treatment, but not quite enough for another go, so let's do it. Let's go to the travel agents and see what they've got. I would love to treat you to a weekend away. It would do me good too.
Imogen gripped her friend's arm, keen to get going.
For the love of God, are you serious?
Yes. Lead on, Kimmy. The girls fell through the door of the travel agents and took up seats in front of an amused, middle-aged man who wasn't used to this level of commotion.
Can I help you, ladies?
Through their nudges and giggles, they just about managed to say, We want a weekend away. The cheapest you've got, as soon as possible. Chapter 8. Jenny and Imogen were catching their breath after 6 hours of wandering around the rain-soaked streets of Amsterdam. Not that the weather could in any way dampen their spirits. They were abroad, having fun, and nothing as insignificant as rain was going to get them down. They had taken in the maze of canals, trodden the cobbled streets, giggled in the red light district, and consumed a gargantuan lunch of pizza, eaten in the street, huddled under a large umbrella in the drizzle.
Emmy, I'm knackered. I need a kip.
Jenny leant on a lamppost and flexed one trainer-clad foot.
You're such a lightweight. There's loads more in our list.
Imogen ribbed.
I know, and I want to see it all. I do, but can we have a break?
Tell you what, you go back and nap, and I'll go and see a couple of museums alone, and then come and collect you when you've had your beauty sleep, or else meet you somewhere.
Oh, you're making me feel bad, but I am seriously wanting my bed.
Imogen laughed.
Don't feel bad. Go back and chill out.
I'll call you in a couple of hours and either you can come find me or I'll come back to the hotel. Jenny didn't need persuading.
Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure.
Don't talk to any strangers!
Jenny yelled as she abandoned her friend and made her way along the crowded street, dodging the cyclists who crisscrossed in front of her. Imogen sat at the table in a bay window and felt the glow of winter sunshine warm her skin through the dappled glass. At last the sun had found its way through the clouds. The earlier deluge had left pavements, boat decks and handrails along the canals with an almost phosphorescent glow, and there was a clean sparkle to the air. The barista arrived promptly with her hot chocolate and a generous slice of the house specialty, apple tart with whipped cream.
There you go. Enjoy.
He placed the tall conical glass by her hand and the plate and fork a little further onto the table.
Thank you. Smells delicious.
She inhaled the rich scent of buttery pastry, warm cinnamon-laden apples, and the sweetness of scorched powdered sugar. Her mouth watered. Imogen gripped the spoon in her right hand and used her left to feel the edge of the plate. Digging into the tart, she scooped up a large mouthful towards her face and felt the satisfying, cloying sensation of cream against the roof of her mouth
as the sweet apple and divine flaky pastry melted on her tongue. She savoured the taste before chewing the tart slowly.
"Excuse me, is the seat taken?"
He was American. His voice held the slightest tremor that belied his confident baritone. His coat smelled of wet wool. He must have got caught in the earlier shower. "No, that's fine. Help yourself," Imogen said without thinking,
and had to use her napkin. "That looks good."
He slid into the chair opposite her. She heard it scrape along the wooden floor and then listened as he removed his coat. He dropped it in a heap on the floor. She felt the weight of it as it lay partly on her foot.
"It tastes good. Not sure what it looks like."
Imogen smiled. She felt his breath coming in her direction, as if he was studying her.
"Oh, sorry, I didn't realise you were blind."
"That's okay, it's not your fault. Nothing to feel sorry about." Imogen beamed, delighted that her lack of vision hadn't been the first thing he'd noticed about her.
"Whose fault was it?"
He slurped noisily at his coffee. She swallowed the last of her vast mouthful of tart and sipped her hot chocolate before she replied. "No one's, not really. I was very premature." She shrugged and placed her drink on the table, raising her hands and letting them fall against her thighs. "It just happened."
"Who are you here with?"
he asked. She heard his thick hair graze his collar, as if he was turning his head to the left and then right, possibly to see if anyone was approaching or watching them.
"No one. I mean, not right now. I'm here with my friend Jenny, but she's buggered off for a nap. Bit of a lightweight."
Imogen dug in for a second mouthful.
"You're here on your own?"
He sounded surprised. She nodded.
"Well, that's really cool."
Imogen could tell he was smiling.
"Yeah, it's actually just my sight that I'm missing. My legs work fine so I can walk from A to B, and I have a tongue in my head, so if I get lost..." "Ouch," he laughed. "That is me told."
They both laughed. "Was that rude?"
"No, not really. More assertive. On the offensive scale, it was a paltry 3 out of 10 at most."
She liked the way he sounded. He reached out and took her hand so that he could shake it.
"I'm Owen. Owen Jackson from Chicago."
She let her hand be waggled up and down.
"I'm Imogen Maguire from Pilton, Scotland." "Yes, I gathered that from your accent. Good to meet you."
She removed her hand and folded it into her lap, suddenly too self-conscious to scoff the rest of her cake in front of Owen Jackson from Chicago.
"Are you visiting here?"
He leaned forward, placing his forearms on the table. She heard the tap of a ring against the tabletop.
"Yes."
Imogen licked her lips, fearing that there might be stray blobs of cream lurking on her face. "Just for the weekend."
"Me too. My last city. A stopover, really, and then home. I've been away for a couple of weeks, seen lots of Europe. It's been awesome."
Owen confirmed brightly, as if this weekend visit was the common ground they had been searching for.
"Did you get to Scotland?"
"No, sadly not. I was in London and then had a few days on the Sussex coast, which was beautiful. I wanted to get up to Edinburgh, but didn't make it."
"Oh, Edinburgh. I think that's near me," she laughed.
"Amsterdam's amazing, right?" Enthusiasm poured from him. Imogen nodded.
"It is. Still quite a lot on my to-do list, but so far, great. Have you seen the Van Gogh Museum yet?"
She smiled at his pronunciation. Van Gogh, making the artist sound more like a commercial vehicle repair garage.
"No, not yet."
"Well, I'm heading over there right after this, if you... I don't know, if maybe you'd like to..."
Owen coughed.
Imogen heard his feet shuffle under the table and his chair creak as he shifted his body weight. He was nervous.
"Are you asking me to come with you?"
"Yes," he breathed out in relief. Imogen felt a swell of happiness in her chest, tinged with nervous anticipation.
"I just have 2 questions.
"Sure, fire away."
"That ring on your finger, it's not of the wedding variety, is it?"
"No," he laughed. "Not at all. My dad bought it for me when I graduated."
"Just checking. And secondly, how old are you? You might be 16 or 104. Usually I'm fairly good with guessing ages from voices, but..."
"Oh, this will be good. Guess then."
"Oh, God, I am suddenly doubting my ability, but if I had to guess, I'd say you were 34?
34? No way, I'm 24.
You should take it as a compliment. Your voice has gravitas, authority, she giggled.
If you say so.
Owen was mollified by the compliment of sorts. I guess it's harder to judge voices you don't know so good. Strangers, I mean. It is. My friend told me not to talk to strangers, but you don't seem strange.
I'm not, he almost pleaded.
Yes, but even if you are, you're going to say that, aren't you?
I guess,
he stuttered. I'm only teasing you, Owen from Chicago. And besides, we're not really strangers. I know lots about you already.
You do?
He was curious.
Yep.
I know you have a heavy coat, quite unsuitable for travelling in, especially when it's wet. I know you've spent longer on the Sussex coast than I have, because I've never been. And I know you graduated from college, and that your dad was so chuffed he bought you a ring.
All true.
He let his hands fall onto the table. See, we're not strangers at all, and so why not? I'd love to go to the Van Gogh Museum with you. You can be my guide.
Oh, God, I didn't think... I mean, is there any point in taking you to an art gallery?
Jesus H. Christ, sunshine, that's nearly a nine.
I am so sorry. I'm nervous, I guess. I don't know anyone that's blind, and I swear all the words sitting on my tongue right now are about seeing and sight, like, did you see this and look at that, and I'm really conscious of not letting them pop out.
That's funny. It's okay, I'm messing with you. I love art galleries.
Usually I listen to the audio guide, and it's like a good book.
Great.
Imogen could hear genuine joy in his voice, and it gladdened her heart. They finished their drinks in a calmer manner, both thinking about the afternoon that was about to unfold. They stood on the pavement, facing the canal.
How do I...
He grabbed her elbow and then felt for her hand.
Neither,
Imogen laughed, shrugging herself free. Can I hold your arm like this? She placed her hand on the underside of his raised forearm. Is that okay?
Yes, it's great. Well, not great that you have to, or that you can't...
He faltered.
You have to relax, Owen,
she laughed, as they slowly navigated Paulus Potterstraat, he nervous of going too fast, and she too shy to ask him to speed up.
You're tall,
commented Imogen, as they paused at a pedestrian crossing.
Yes, tall, dark and handsome, as a matter of fact.
Is that right?
She smiled at him.
Well, tall and dark is true.
So what do you do in Chicago? She was curious to learn.
I'm an underwriter for an insurance company. Mainly I just study computer files and pass them on or else refer them. It's boring, really.
Sounds it. What about you, Imogen? Do you do anything? She stopped walking and faced the tall, dark stranger.
That's also a nine. Jesus, what do you think I do? Sit home all day and get my nails done?
I didn't mean to...
Owen stuttered. Imogen howled.
I'm messing with you again. She patted his arm. I actually work for a charity, aimed mainly at teenagers who are blind or visually impaired, making sure they're aware of all that is available to assist them and trying to help with the isolation of blindness.
Is it isolating?
His voice was steady now. Serious.
It can be.
In a world that's always busy, it can sometimes feel as if you're lost. Not only unable to see the world, but like it can't see you.
Owen was silent. I don't believe that anyone can see you.
Oh. His compliment threw Imogen a little off balance. Her heart hammered in her chest.
Well, thank you. I can hear a tram coming.
They both stood and listened.
I can't see one.
Owen looked left and right along the street. I felt the rumbling in my feet, she explained. Just like I can feel the bikes whizzing past me. The way they cut through the air and the vibrations they make are quite particular.
Oh, yes, you were right. Here comes a tram now.
Owen sounded surprised, as if she'd summoned it, a kind of magic trick.
Are all your other senses heightened to compensate for your lack of sight?
Despite his sincerity, Imogen doubled over with laughter, recalling her recent conversation with Jenny.
Yeah, that's me, a regular superhero like Spidey-Man.
She batted his arm.
No, I just have regular senses like anyone else, though I suppose mine may be a little finer tuned.
You're a funny girl,
Owen concluded, as they crossed the street. Imogen wasn't sure if he meant funny haha or funny weird. The Van Gogh Museum was busy. Owen checked his heavy coat and Imogen's jacket into the cloakroom, and then they wandered around the corridors and into the brightly lit galleries where the masterpieces hung. Owen gave cursory descriptions of many of the paintings and any sculptures that they came across. and was equally keen to tell her about the crowds they navigated, making their way to the Kurikawa wing, where a small group stood gathered around the painting they'd all come to see.
There's a tour group in front of us, but I think they're on the point of leaving. Then we can get closer.
Imogen gripped the arm of this stranger she trusted. Her heart beat in anticipation, picking up on his sense of excitement. There was a burble of conversation, sighs and exclamations of joy all around her.
Slowly, the sound seemed to drift to the right as people made their way into the next room.
Owen walked forward and the two of them stood in silence for some seconds. Imogen wanted to ask questions but was wary of shattering the peace, destroying the almost reverent atmosphere.
Wow, Imogen. I'm staring at Van Gogh's sunflowers. I am actually here looking at this painting that is smaller than I imagined and worth tens of millions of pounds. Can you believe that?
Owen turned to her to ask. It seems a lot. I think IKEA have prints for about a tenner.
I bet the ones in IKEA don't have security guards. This one does. Two miserable-looking men in each corner of the room and cameras winking at us from the roof and the wall.
Are you saying nicking it's out of the question? Imogen smiled.
It's beautiful, he whispered, ignoring the question. Describe it to me.
Owen Jackson coughed to clear his throat.
I hope I can do it justice.
He took a deep breath.
The picture is not perfect or fragile like real flowers. The ones here are not even delicate. In fact, the flowers are clunky, misshapen almost. The paint is thick and you can see the lines where a brush or a knife has been at work. But for those reasons, it feels, I don't know how to describe it, new, fresh. Like he's just finished it and walked out of the room. And even though we're in rainy Amsterdam, the colors are so vivid, so real, that it's like standing in the south of France in front of this bright burst of yellow and ochre. So real you can feel the heat of the midday sun on your skin. And the vase is simple, as if painted quickly because he had to capture the flowers before they wilted. And that makes me feel unbelievably sad that something so beautiful is so transient. And he's long dead, not just walked from the room, not at all. Imogen stood deep in concentration, her head turned in his direction. It was a second or two before she spoke.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you very much. Her voice was small. She knew that she would never forget the magic of this painting and the way her companion had made it real for her, painted the sunflowers in her mind so vividly that she too was lost in the picture. Owen turned and bent forward. Without thought or forewarning, he grazed Imogen's cheek with a kiss. Oh, she was a little taken aback as her tall, dark guide snatched this moment. It was a sweet kiss, firm and full of promise. And while they both recovered from the intensity of the contact, Imogen's phone buzzed in her pocket.
Hello? Emmy, I'm awake. Where are you? I'll come and find you and we can tear up the town.
Jenny whooped with newfound energy.
Oh, actually, Jen, I won't be free for a while. I'm just,
She wondered how best to phrase it.
You just, what? Is this code? Do you need me to call the police?
Jenny was only half joking.
No, I'm fine. I've met a nice guy. He stood in front of me now, so I can't say too much. But I thought I might hang out with him for a bit.
Imogen felt Owen squeeze her arm in approval.
Are you joshing me? We come all the way to bloody Holland. I turned my back for 5 minutes and you've pulled a bloke.
I'll give you a call in a bit, Jen. Is that okay?
It'll bloody well have to be.
I think I'll go back to sleep. I was only up because I thought you'd be alone and I felt guilty. If you're sorted, I'll have another 40 winks. I'll see you later.
Be careful, Emmy, and keep your phone on.
Imogen returned it to her pocket. That was my friend Jenny. You probably gathered that. She's got a voice like a foghorn. She's protective of you.
Yes, I've known her a very long time.
It's good to have friends like that.
He kicked at the floor, indicating by his forlorn tone of voice that maybe he didn't.
Imogen listened to Owen shuffling from foot to foot.
What would you like to do now?
She wanted him to make the decision, wary of coercing him.
Whatever you'd like. We can go get some food, seek out coffee, another gallery, a canal walk.
All good. I'll leave it up to you.
Imogen smiled.
Suddenly, Owen clapped loudly, making her jump.
I have it. I know exactly where I want to take you.
Lead on.
Imogen slipped her arm through his. This was turning into a very good day indeed. They walked along, chatting and listening to each other in the way that two people do when they meet and feel a connection that is hard to describe. There was something new about this for Imogen. Often, when meeting a stranger, conversation was awkward, stilted, as she had so little in common with them and no shared history to fall back on. But with Owen, it felt quite the opposite. There was so much to talk about because they knew so little about each other. It was exhilarating. "Do you have brothers and sisters?" she asked. "Yes, two. One of each, both older. My sister's married and has two kids and lives in North Carolina, and my brother is in the U.S. Air Force, making us all proud, putting on the uniform. He's away on tour right now."
"You must miss him."
"I do, yes. And my sister's kids. They are two of my very favorite people."
"You sound broody,"
laughed Imogen, thinking how his tone mirrored her own, an insight into her longing to be a mum. "No, not really. I love them, but I can't have kids of my own. Mumps, when I was younger. It's just how it is. I'm kind of reconciled to it."
Imogen squeezed his arm at the revelation. She heard the tone beneath his practice words and could decipher the echo of regret.
"What about you? Any siblings?" Imogen shook her head.
"No, just me and about a million cousins. People often ask if it's lonely being an only child, but our house was always jam-packed. Or else we were at my gran's, who lives close by, and her house was always packed. So, no, not lonely at all."
"My mom passed away when I was 10, so our house has always been kind of quiet. I don't remember it being busy and full of her laughter, not really. But my dad tells me it was like that once."
"You must miss her, too."
"Very much.
Even now." Imogen heard the catch in his voice. "I didn't mean to upset you," she said quickly.
"No, not at all. I just don't really talk about her much, and when I do, it gets me."
Owen clapped again, a habit of his. Again, she jumped.
"Hey, no time for regret. It's our anniversary."
"It is?" She laughed a little nervously.
"Yes, I have known you, my new friend, for 3 hours exactly."
"Wow, happy anniversary."
She smiled at him.
"And can I ask, do you kiss all your new friends?"
"Only the pretty ones."
Oh, well, lucky me," she giggled.
"God, that sounded like I do it often. In fact, I have never done that before. I just got caught up in the moment. I hope I didn't offend you."
"Offend me?
No. As my gran says, a bit of hanky-panky is actually good for you."
"Hanky-panky? Now that's something I don't hear every day," Owen chuckled. Suddenly, Imogen stopped walking as if concentrating on something that lay ahead.
"Oh, my word,"
she inhaled deeply.
That is quite possibly the most incredible scent I've ever experienced."
She breathed deeply, walking on towards the source of it.
"Oh, Owen!"
She swayed as if intoxicated. He held her arm and guided her forward.
"I knew you'd like it. Welcome to the world-famous Blumenmarkt, the Amsterdam Flower Market."
They stepped out, Owen holding fast to Imogen's arm.
"So the market is here, on the Single Canal, and it floats. The stalls are on houseboats," he explained.
"That's amazing,"
Imogen sighed, still quite overcome by the beautiful scent of flowers, whose rain-kissed petals had only benefited from a light touch of drizzle when it fluttered in beneath the canopies.
"It's an explosion of colour, rainbows in front of my eyes, all shades from hot to cold. Here, it's a lily."
Owen let go of her arm and bent forward to pick a pale, long-stemmed lily from a bucket. He held the flower beneath her palm. Imogen let the silky, soft petals brush the underside of her hand. It tickled a little. She raised the flower to her nose and inhaled the peppery, warm scent.
"Lovely," she said,
running her finger along the smooth, pointed outline of a petal.
"Try this one."
He removed the lily and placed a shorter, stubbier stem in her hand. Imogen ran her hand up the stalk, which was covered in fine hairs that felt a little resistant when she brushed them the wrong way. Her fingers tentatively touched the cluster of long, sharp petals that were almost quill-like. She sniffed her fingers, now slightly sticky with residue. They smelt sweet, sickly, and reminded her of fruit that was spoiling.
"Oh, I'm not sure about that one. What is it?"
Haven't the faintest idea, but it looks very exotic. Its color is fiery, and I can picture it growing somewhere hot and dusty. Imogen handed it back and wiped her hand on her coat.
Okay, this one is easy.
Owen opened her fingers and placed not one, but two slender twig-like stems in her palm. Imogen ran her fingers over the knotty hubs that held the most delicate, paper-thin, trumpeted petals in a neat row, clinging to one side of the stem. She raised them to her face and took a deep breath. Freesias! Their smell was sweet, honey-like, and pretty. I love them.
They look incredible, too. They're a glorious, deep, dark purple, the color of a bruise or a rolling, thundery sky, and yet, despite their darkness, they are delicate and beautiful.
Imogen stood still, taking in the majesty of the market, listening to the happy burble of the visitors who all sounded equally enthralled to be in such a place. It had been a long time since someone had gone to so much trouble just for her.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you for bringing me here.
Oh, my pleasure. It's quite a sight. I shan't forget it.
She could hear the happiness in his voice.
Me either.
As the two of them stood beneath the nearest canopy, rain began to fall again in earnest, pooling in pockets of canvas before falling in a rush, splashing down on the pavement below and sending spray up over their feet.
Come on.
Owen gripped Imogen's arm and hurried her into the street where a cab had pulled over to drop off a fare. He practically bundled her into the back seat before climbing in beside her and giving the driver the address.
Where are we going? Should I be worried? Because if you are kidnapping me, I should warn you, you'll be very unlikely to get much of a ransom. And you've clearly never met my friend Jenny, who would beat the shite out of you.
I'm not kidnapping you. I just thought we could go back to my hotel.
Flippin' heck, that's a bit forward, isn't it?
No, oh God, no, I didn't mean it like that, or for that. No.
She heard the embarrassment in his protestation.
I just thought we could get dry and there's a nice bar so we could have a drink and maybe some soup.
He stuttered. Phew, well, thank goodness for that, Owen. Thank goodness we're going for soup, because I'm not that kind of girl.
Imogen gave a mock tut. Soup sounds good.
She felt his thigh muscles unknot with relief as they sat close side by side while the cab trundled across the city. I've had the best afternoon, thank you. Imogen turned her head towards him.
Me too.
Absolutely brilliant. You could be a guide, you know.
She gave him the best compliment she could think of.
Really?
Yes, really. You're very considerate and original. Who knew that freesias could be the colour of a bruise or thunder but still smell so sweet?
I enjoyed it too. It's funny, it kind of made me look at the world in a different way because you can't.
I haven't had to think about how to describe things before. Not in that way. I'm glad I did good.
You really did. You have a knack for it.
She patted his thigh. The hotel lobby was a little sterile. The soft carpeting and groups of high-backed sofas meant it could have been any hotel in any city in the world. One of a large chain, it was soulless and efficient. Conversation was conducted at little more than a murmur. The temperature was carefully regulated, and there was a tinkle of piano music in the background that Imogen thought might be more appropriate in a lift.
So,
Owen removed his heavy coat and placed it over his arm.
Shall we get a drink?
She nodded. That'd be lovely. They wandered to the bar area where foreign visitors sipped glasses of wine or swigged from cold bottled beers, and all commented on the lousy weather, as though they'd expected the Netherlands in winter to be tropical.
What would you like?
Whispered Owen, close to her face. He was sweating a little. It heightened his natural scent and wasn't unpleasant. Glass of white wine would be great. She folded her cane into her handbag.
Shall we get a bottle?
He asked tentatively.
Why not? We're on holiday, after all. We should do things we wouldn't normally do at home.
Owen clapped again. This time, however, she didn't jump. She was getting used to him. With two squeaky clean wine glasses and the opened bottle on a tray, they navigated the tables and sofas, looking for a good place to sit.
It's all a bit busy.
Owen twisted to left and right.
We could take it to your room.
Imogen felt bold and scared all at the same time, her cool delivery masking a pulse that raced nervously.
Well, yes, sure, we can, if you are comfortable with that.
She heard him swallow. He was nervous too.
Of course. I mean, it's only a glass of wine, right? And maybe we could watch some crap TV?
Yep, crap TV sounds good.
He smiled as they made their way to the lift. On his floor, they giggled their way along the narrow corridor.
Here we are.
Owen put down the tray and retrieved the key card from his wallet. Imogen pulled out her phone and texted Jenny.
If you're awake, don't wait up. I'm safe and having a blast. We'll make it up to you tomorrow. I like Amsterdam. Kiss, 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 kiss.
As the door closed behind them, Imogen found herself in a large room. Owen walked forward and put the tray on a hard surface, table or desk. The sound was muted as if the walls were soft. The air felt warm against her face.
This feels nice, she whispered.
Sorry, it's a bit dark. I'll find the light switch.
Owen, it doesn't make any difference to me.
She placed her hand on his arm.
Oh, God, I'm stupid. I'm sorry, Imogen.
Once again, he sounded mortified.
Don't be sorry. You have no idea how happy it makes me that you forget.
I think you are amazing, he breathed. Imogen ran her fingers through her hair.
I find it odd that people think I'm amazing or brave or any other adjective they want to throw at me, when I only do what everyone else does every day of the week, without praise or recognition. She knew that he was staring at her and felt the heat of a blush creep over her cheeks.
But that's just it. You're amazing because you do what everyone else does every day of the week when you can't see. Imogen shrugged.
I guess.
So were you born with any sight? Have you ever been able to see?
No.
Then what do you dream about? I mean, how do you dream?
He was curious.
I can't imagine not dreaming in pictures, not seeing things while I sleep, or not seeing color.
Imogen smiled.
It was rare that someone who didn't know her well was so forward with her questioning. She could tell by his tone that he was genuinely interested.
I dream in sounds and feelings and smells and touch. It's just like it is for me every day, like real life, only I'm asleep.
Okay, I could have guessed the asleep bit. Duh.
He laughed.
Oh, rude. She folded her arms across her chest. That was nudging a four.
Owen reached out and ran his hands over her arms before pulling her close to him.
My life isn't great, Imogen. I'm quite lonely a lot of the time. Meeting you has made me feel alive. I feel happy.
I never would have thought this was right here waiting for me in Amsterdam.
I think you never know what's around the next corner. Never know what twists and turns life might throw at you next. But you should always be ready to face whatever comes at you. He kissed her very gently on the mouth. Imogen pulled back and touched her fingers to his chest, feeling the buttons of his cotton shirt. I was thinking, Owen.
What?
He breathed. I might quite like to be a girl like that, just for an hour or so. It sounds like more fun than having soup.
They laughed together as they tumbled towards the large, soft bed. When their faces touched, she felt the pressure of metal against her nose.
You wear glasses?
Yes. She listened to the clatter as he threw them onto the bedside cabinet.
You look beautiful, he sighed.
Oh, well, I do now you've taken your glasses off.
Trust me. You are beautiful with or without my glasses. He kissed her neck. And you feel wonderful and smell wonderful.
Running her hands over his shirt, Imogen was helping him with the buttons.
Is this okay?
He whispered, anticipating what might come next.
She nodded. It was more than okay. This was living. This was an adventure.
Chapter 9.
Did you have a good time?
Duncan asked, as he scooped up the girl's bags and guided his daughter and her friend out to his van in the airport short-stay car park.
Mm-hmm,
Imogen smiled, wary of giving away too much to her dad.
We had a great time. One of us rather more so than the other.
Jenny jabbed her friend in the back.
One of us was too tired to keep up the pace,
Imogen retorted, laughing.
Thank goodness one of us was too knackered to keep up the pace, or one of us might have been a right royal gooseberry.
Duncan shook his head in confusion as he loaded their bags into the back of his van.
I haven't got the foggiest what the two yous is talking about, but as long as you had a great trip, that's the main thing.
The girls squashed into the front seat together in the way they had been doing since they were small.
We did, Dad. We really did,
Imogen told him. Duncan beamed, happy that their friendship was fully restored. After dropping Jenny off at home, where a rather animated Shay waited for his wife on the doorstep, and enjoying a cup of tea at her parents' kitchen table, Imogen lay on her bed and switched on her laptop. And there it was. His name. Repeated in a slightly robotic sound alert from her inbox. Owen Jackson. Owen Jackson. It became part of her daily routine, reading and replying to his daily email. With a 6-hour time difference, their lives ran half a day adrift, with him waking while she was in the middle of her working day, and Imogen settling down to bed at night as he was hitting the gym or still sorting through computer files in a dimly lit office. "So how's lover boy?" Jenny asked, as the bus sat in traffic on the ferry road. The air was a thick fog of wet clothes, steamed up windows and the smell of fast food wafting from the teenage boy a couple of seats back, who was tucking into a fat burger.
"Okay, yep. Okay, yep, that's it."
Jenny elbowed her friend.
"Ow, what else do you want?"
Imogen laughed, rubbing her side.
"I want the juicy gossip, to hear his declarations of love and to know what plans you're making for a rematch."
Imogen was quiet. "There are no plans, Jane, and certainly no declarations of love."
"Oh, don't say that. I'm already saving for flights to Chicago and I've picked my wedding outfit from the catalogue."
"Very funny."
"Don't look so grumpy. This is supposed to be exciting. Don't you still email each other every day?"
Jenny was not going to let it drop.
"We do, aye, but..."
Imogen didn't know where to start.
"But what?"
"I don't know. It's difficult being so far away. It's hard to progress, move forward."
"Oh, honey, I know, but if it's worth having..."
"No," Imogen interrupted her friend. "Actually, it's not. It's not worth having. And if I'm being honest, it started to feel like a bit of a chore. We say the same things over and over. I tell him about my day and he tells me about his, and we ask the same questions." She sighed. "There are only so many times you can read what someone has had for their sandwich for lunch and what the weather might do tomorrow. When you are with someone in person, you can chat about where you are, what's happening, make plans. But this is different. We are stuck in one day in Amsterdam. One beautiful, brilliant, magical day in Amsterdam. But I think that's it. I think that's all we were meant to have. And staying in touch feels like we're trying to eke it out, make it more than it ever should be."
"Shit," Jenny sounded disappointed. "I thought it might be the real deal. You were so happy."
"I was. I am. I don't regret a thing. But that doesn't mean I have to keep playing boyfriend and girlfriend just because for one day I was happy and we had great sex in the Amsterdam equivalent of the Premier Inn." Imogen hadn't meant to shout, but the titters running through the bus passengers and the cough from Burger Boy told her that her voice had carried a little further than she had intended. Jenny laid her head on her friend's shoulder as the bus finally moved forward.
"You're right. It doesn't. Thank you for understanding. I'm going to tell him tonight, just to get it done. I found you much more exciting when you were my interesting, exotic friend with a fabulous Yankee boyfriend. Now you're just back to plain old Imogen from West Pilton. Sorry to disappoint you. Anyway, I thought I was your adventurous friend who hung off a building on a piece of chewing gum." Imogen laughed. "Suppose so," Jenny sighed.
It was going to take a little while for her to recover from the disappointment and to erase the images of herself tripping like fantastic around Chicago on a visit. Imogen laughed, but her tummy still flipped at the prospect of the conversation she was going to have with Owen. Imogen curled her feet under her on the sofa and pulled her fleecy dressing gown around her shoulders. This moment had dogged her thoughts all day. Her palms were sweating and her breath came shallowly. She dialed the number and waited. Owen's voice was a sharp reminder of his loveliness. He was happy to hear from her, his tone welcoming and comforting, like the warm back seat of a taxi on a rainy day.
"Hey, Immy. Well, this has just made a pretty bad day a whole lot better. I've left the office, I'm strolling along North LaSalle, and it is freezing," he laughed.
"It's midnight here and just as cold." She kept her tone flat, not wanting to mislead him any more than she maybe already had. "Owen, I need to talk to you."
"Uh-oh, that sounds ominous. Is everything okay?"
Imogen shook her head to erase the memory of the flower market and that wonderful time together. This was no time for sentiment, however. Far better for them both in the long run, to be brutally honest.
"Not really, no. The thing is..." "Only me, Mum,"
Imogen called into the kitchen as she stepped into the hallway of her childhood home.
"Kettle's on,"
came Isla's stock reply. Imogen shrugged her arms from her coat
and felt for the square newel post on which she hung it. Her fingers lightly brushed the spindles of the staircase to her right, as they had countless times before, helping her to navigate her way around her childhood home.
"Hiya," she called.
"Hello, darling." Isla came over and wrapped her daughter in a brief but tight hug. "How's you?"
"Great.
Tired, the usual." Imogen gave the summary. She took a seat at the table and yawned.
"Work busy?"
"Yep." She rested her head on one upturned hand, her elbow firmly planted.
"Good God, Imogen, if you're that tired, why don't you go away to your bed?"
Isla poured the hot water onto the tea bags and gave them a little squeeze with a teaspoon against the side of the mug.
"Oh, sorry, Mum. I've just no energy."
"Have you got a bug?" Her mum swept her daughter's brow with the back of one hand. "You feel all right to me."
"Don't think so,"
Imogen yawned.
"I'm getting my period and I'm just, bleh, you know, sore boobs, bloated, yuck. I'll be fine in a couple of days."
She stretched her hand across the table to reach for her tea.
"Imogen?"
"Mm-hmm." She sipped her drink slowly.
"Don't quite know how to say this, but there's no chance you could be pregnant, is there?"
Imogen snorted laughter into her tea, then sat very still. "Do you know, Mum, I've not considered that. I've just assumed that this attempt will fail like the last time because I don't think I'd cope with the disappointment, daren't hope, and I've been so busy."
"I know, it's just that..."
"What?" Imogen placed the mug on the table and turned towards her mum, trying to pick up clues from her breathing and movements. Isla coughed.
"You look rosy. Well, blooming, some would say. And your boobs might be sore, but they're also bigger. A lot bigger."
Imogen cupped her chest and felt the spill of flesh over the top of her bra.
"Oh my God,"
her mum continued.
"And the tiredness. You could be."
Imogen sat still, thinking of the evening she'd spent cloistered in a hotel room with a tall, dark, kind, bespectacled stranger who was incapable of having children, never suspecting for a minute that the procedure she had had weeks earlier might have worked.
"Oh my God, Emmy, this could be it."
Her mum trod the line between letting her own excitement get the better of her and not building up her daughter's hopes.
"I don't know."
Imogen swallowed and reached again for her tea, keen to rid her mouth of the metallic taste that had plagued her for a few weeks now.
"Oh God, Mum, I just don't know."
It was 3 days later, as Jenny stood in the hallway, that Imogen tried the words out for the first time.
"You're fucking kidding me!"
Jenny yelled as she jumped up and down on the spot.
"I'm not." "Oh my good God, but I thought, how, when?"
Jenny lunged forward and squeezed her friend.
"The second attempt, just before Amsterdam." "Holy shit! Oh my God, no way! You're going to be a mum! Oh my God!" "I can't believe it either, Jen. Turns out my gran was right. A good night out and a bit of hanky-panky to relax me was all it required in a way."
"Shit! Have you told Owen?" Jenny cut to the chase.
"No, I don't see the need. I'll not see him again and it's nothing to do with him. It hasn't really sunk in." "I can't believe it. I'm going to be an auntie."
Imogen turned and made her way into her lounge, letting her fingers trail over the familiar surfaces and openings, the dimensions of which were imprinted on her brain like a map. The girls flopped at either end of the sofa.
"You're going to be a mum. How do you feel?"
Imogen exhaled.
"Tired, excited, nervous, shocked, and not necessarily in that order."
"Did you do a test?"
"Aye, 4 tests, just to be on the safe side. My mum was with me, it was hilarious."
"Have you told your dad?"
"Yep, that night. It wasn't like we could keep it a secret with my mum squealing the place down and planning her knitting."
"How far are you?" Jenny sat forward.
11 weeks.
"Blimey."
"I know.
And what's scaring me more than anything is that if this baby was as premature as I was, it means it would be born in just about that time again." Imogen pulled the sleeves of her jumper over her hands.
"Shit!"
Jenny summed it up.
"Yep, shit."
"When's the last time you spoke to Chicago boy?"
"It was the night I ended it, about 6 weeks ago now."
"I'm definitely not going to tell him, Jen. What would be the point?" Her friend placed her hand on Imogen's leg.
"The point would be that he mattered to you, and it would be good for this baby to have as many people involved in its life as possible. I think he'd be a better role model than she."
Imogen pictured Owen walking home from work, the way he had sounded when she'd ended it, The crack in his voice, his clear disappointment, it didn't make her a very nice person, but she'd been a little gladdened by his response, happy that he had cared.
It's got to be about my choices too, Jen. Plus, I genuinely don't want to hurt him. I'd hate him to feel that we might have a future. That wouldn't be fair to him. The important thing is that I'm fine, and this baby and I will be fine. Imogen smiled at the thought of her little one, nestling safe and warm inside her. Every ounce of her body was filled with happy anticipation. I still can't believe it, she thought.
But you said the reason it wasn't working was that you couldn't move forward, couldn't progress because you were too far apart. Surely something like this opens up a whole new topic of conversation, and that will help things progress.
I said that was one of the reasons, Jen.
Christ, you're taking this breakup harder than either of us.
I just remember how you looked in Amsterdam, so happy. And that's what I've always wanted for you.
Her friend touched her arm.
I know, and I love you for it, you daft mare. But I'm happy now. I am. This is what I've always dreamt of.
And getting hooked up with a guy I don't know just for the sake of a neat ending, it's not fair on anyone, least of all him.
I'm not sure if you are really brave or really stupid. Jenny lay back on the sofa.
I think we both know that anyone who dangles off a building on a bit of chewing gum is a bit of both.
You're probably right, Jenny laughed.
And if it's a girl, don't feel embarrassed about naming her after me. I won't mind at all.
No, that'd be too weird, having my child and my best friend with the same name. Anyways, it might be a boy.
Well, she wouldn't mind either.
I don't think so, Imogen laughed.
You dissing my man's name?
Jenny thumped her friend on the arm.
Oi, you can't do that to me. I am with child.
With child, you dafty.
The two girls collapsed in giggles on the sofa. Chapter 10. It was the early hours of the morning. The heating was yet to kick in and the place felt a little damp. With her 20-week scan picture stuck to the fridge for all to admire, Imogen ran the cold tap in the kitchen. She'd slept poorly and her dry throat suggested she'd been snoring, open-mouthed. Gripping the tall tumbler in her palm, she turned to make her way back to the bed. It happened in a flash. The glass slipped from her hand and shattered with an ear-splitting crack. Imogen took a step forward and felt the bite of a shard in the soft sole of her foot.
Ouch!
She instinctively stepped backwards, and this time the pain was sharp and instant in her heel. Tears sprang to her eyes as she stood marooned in the kitchen, surrounded by slivers of glass. Turning carefully and trying to ignore the pain in her feet, she reached forward, sliding her hand along the work surface until her fingertips touched upon the phone in its charging station. Thank goodness she had replaced it and not, as was her habit, left it languishing on the sofa or in the bathroom. Her fingers shook as she pressed the preset digit that linked her to her parents.
Hello?
Her dad's voice croaked as he tried to shrug off the veil of sleep.
Dad, I...
What is it, darling?
Are you okay?
She heard the note of alarm in his voice and wanted to reassure him through her tears.
Dad, I'm okay, but can you come over?
I'll be there in a minute, Emmy. Hang on.
What's wrong? What's happened?
She heard her mum's panic-stricken query as her dad fumbled to replace the phone in the darkness. Imogen started to shiver. She'd thought she would be returning to the warmth of her bed and had neglected to grab her dressing gown. It was cold in the kitchen and she was too afraid to move. Her cotton nightie shook with the tremors in her body. She ran her palms over her tummy.
It's okay, little one. No need to be afraid. It's all okay.
Only minutes later, she heard the sound of a key in the lock, and her parents rushed in.
Here we are, darling,
Isla soothed as Duncan flipped the light switch.
I've hurt my foot, and I'm too scared to move.
Oh, honey, I can see.
Stand very still,
her mum instructed, calmly, firmly. Isla went into overdrive, crouching on the kitchen floor, collecting the larger shards of glass, sweeping the smaller fragments into the dustpan, and finishing with a good vacuum around the space. Duncan overrode the boiler setting and put the heating on, before nipping upstairs to fetch his daughter's dressing gown, which he placed around her shivering shoulders.
There, that's the last of it, Isla soothed. Dunk, can you fetch a chair from the table?
He duly grabbed a dining chair and placed it by his daughter. Imogen sat and wrapped her arms around herself, feeling the warmth slowly return to her body. Isla lifted her right foot and placed it on her own lap, tending to her cuts, cleaning and cooing as though her daughter were still a child.
Thanks, Mum.
That's what we are here for. Any time you need us, you just shout, and we will be here, always.
You frightened us half to death,
her dad chimed in. Sorry, Dad.
It was fairly comical. I'm only glad it's still dark out. There's your mother and me in our nightclothes and coats running around the streets like we'd lost our marbles. And what's even funnier is that the sun is coming up soon and we'll have to walk home like this. I think we'll make out we were sleepwalking.
They all laughed. Isla placed her daughter's foot on the floor. There. And the other one. Without warning, Imogen slumped forward into her mum's arms.
Oh, Mum!
Isla held her daughter and stroked her hair. Shh! It's okay. Don't you cry. She looked at her husband. This was a rare display of emotion from their child.
I'm scared, Imogen whispered.
No need. No need. It's all cleared away. Nothing to hurt you now. It's fine.
I'm pregnant.
Yes, darling, we do know. And if we didn't, we might have noticed. She placed her hand on her daughter's full belly.
I'm pregnant, Mum. And all I can think about is what would it have been like to have a baby crawling on the floor when that happened?
Isla and Duncan were silent.
How do I keep them safe, Mum? How do I keep my little one safe if I can't always stop myself from getting hurt? What am I going to do?
Her sobs were loud and unrestrained.
How am I going to do this?
Isla pulled her into a sitting position and held her by the tops of her arms. Now you listen to me, Imogen Clare. All new mums feel this way to a certain degree. Isla sniffed. When you were born, I was petrified. We both were.
That's the truth, her dad chimed.
The only blind person I'd had any contact with before that was that old man who used to stand outside British Home Stores, playing a harmonica and collecting coins in his upturned cap on the floor. Another man used to walk him there in the morning and then collect him later in the day. He was a poor soul and I... Isla swallowed her own tears. I thought a terrible life awaited you. A little life. I was so scared of bringing you home for the first time. Scared stupid. I couldn't imagine how I would care for this baby who couldn't see. How I would teach you about the world and how I would keep you safe. But the truth is, it was me who had a lot to learn. Me who was taught. I watched you blossom into the most amazing child. Strong, willful, determined, inquisitive. Your blindness never came into it. I have watched you overcome every obstacle that has ever blocked your path.
We're so proud of you, Imogen.
She smiled to hear the tremor in her dad's voice. Her mum continued. And there was one day when things changed. Actually, that's not true. More accurately, it was the day that I changed. You were 10 and we'd gone up on the family jaunt up to Loch Katrin. I'd always been so afraid of getting in the water because you couldn't see the bottom and the odd bit of weed or a branch might touch your leg. I used to watch the boys and Gran and Grampy bobbing around having a laugh. She sighed. But that day we arrived and unpacked the car and your cousins and all were in the water, screaming and splashing around while we set the tents up. I watched you step out of your jeans and throw your t-shirt over your head. In your blue swimsuit, you walked slowly to the edge of the grass. You didn't know I was watching you. And when your feet touched the plank of the dock and you felt the wood beneath your toes, you ran. Isla stopped to mop at the tears that streaked her face. You ran, Emmy, with no idea what lay ahead or how deep the water was, or even when the dock ended. You ran. I watched you. Powering along the dock with your head back and your arms held high. And as soon as your feet reached the end of the jetty, you lifted your legs and hurled yourself through the air. Isla fought for breath. It was magnificent. You had no idea where you were landing or what lay in wait, but you didn't care. I stood staring at the water and it felt like minutes, but of course it was only seconds until you popped your wee head above the surface like a seal. I called your dad.
She did. Grabbed my arm and said, you won't believe what she's just gone and done.
I couldn't believe it. You were so brave. Braver than me. Fearless. I realised then that I had to let you fly, my fearless girl. I knew on that day that you could do anything.
And now you're having a baby. And this child will truly be the luckiest bairn alive to have you as its mum.
Imogen beamed at her.
Thank you. Thank you, Mum.
Chapter 11. It was 10 o'clock on a cold, rainy Thursday when Leah Mary Maguire arrived in the world, weighing a very respectable 7 pounds and 2 ounces. Screaming and crying with legs flailing and fists clenched, she was a little battler, just like her mum. Isla and Duncan sat staring at their daughter, who held their granddaughter tightly in her arms, running her fingers through the baby's shock of dark, curly hair. Imogen was a natural.
How are you feeling?
Isla whispered.
You don't have to whisper, Mum. They're surrounded by noise the whole time they're in the womb. Us talking isn't going to wake her.
Imogen laughed.
Yes, I've been told that before.
Isla sighed.
I'm feeling fine. Tired, obviously, bit sore, but good. No better than good, amazing. She's a great little feeder. Not quite got the hang of sleeping at night time yet, but that'll come.
Has Jen been in?
Her dad whispered too.
Has she been in? I can't get rid of her. She's obsessed. Talks to Leah as though I'm not here. Making plans and telling her all the places she'll take her.
Just hope I'm invited too.
Imogen thought about the moment when she'd asked her best friend to be her daughter's guardian, should there ever be the need. And the reply,
of course I fucking will. Who else is going to do it? I'm her auntie and I love her.
Imogen smiled at the memory.
Oh, talk of the devil.
Duncan smiled as his daughter's mate poked her head around the door.
Hello all, how are we?
Jenny made a beeline for the bed and kissed the little girl on the forehead.
All good, Imogen beamed.
A smile was never very far from her lips these days. It was as if she existed in this blissful bubble, where all she needed was to be close to Leah, inhaling the warm scent of her and feeling the softness of her skin against her own.
Isla, Dunks, this is going to sound really rude to me.
Well, that doesn't usually stop you, Jen,
Duncan chortled.
Right enough. But would you mind if I had a word with Emmy on my own, in private?
Oh, Isla grabbed her bag and sat up straight.
No, sure.
She prodded her husband and touched her hand to her daughter's leg under the cover.
Be back in a wee while.
Imogen waved, listening for the door to close.
What's going on?
She asked curiously.
Oh, God, here we go.
You all right, Jen? She could hear her friend pacing up and down and huffing.
Don't speak. Just let me talk.
Imogen heard her take a deep breath.
I don't always agree with you, Emmy, but I always respect your wishes, you know that.
Jenny spoke quickly, nervously.
True, that's why we get on.
She wondered where this might be going.
The thing is, I've done something.
What?
Imogen's voice was stern.
Oh God, what have you done?
I'm thinking you've registered her for karate classes or changed her name by deed poll to Jenny. Jen sat on the edge of the bed and ran a finger over Leah's tiny button nose.
No, it's worse than that. Probably worse than all of that put together.
You've killed a man?
Imogen laughed to hide her rising fear.
No again, but you might kill me. All I can say is it was an accident. Kind of an accident. I started a ball rolling with the best intentions and it kind of came back very quickly and hit me in the arse.
More like a crap boomerang than a ball, really.
For God's sake, Jenny, that's a lot of kind ofs. Just spit it out.
Imogen was starting to feel nervous and Leah shifted in her arms, in tune with her mother's emotions.
I might have accidentally sent out a message to all my Facebook friends that my mate Emmy had given birth to a beautiful wee girl.
Imogen laughed with relief. Oh, don't worry about that. Folk are sure to find out soon enough when they see me wandering around with this little bundle. Don't worry about it.
So you broke the news? That's fine. You're forgiven. Well, thank you, but that's not the end of it.
Oh, God, go on.
Imogen felt her heart rate increase once again.
The thing is, I forgot that one of my Facebook friends is a Chicago boy. I added him when you two were, you know.
Right. Imogen swallowed, wondering how Owen might feel about the news and whether he might get in contact.
Well, it can't be helped. I'm sure he won't even see it. And if he does, then he'll probably just be glad he had a lucky escape.
He did see it. Jenny was adamant about that.
Oh.
Imogen held Leah a little tighter as she squirmed in her mother's arms.
He's outside.
I'm sorry. Imogen thought she must have misheard. Chicago boy, Owen? He's outside, Jenny repeated.
Outside the hospital?
Imogen felt her pulse race and her head swim.
Outside the room? Jenny clarified.
Shit! Imogen managed.
Aye, shit.
Imogen turned her head at the sound of a light rapping on the door, and before she had time to think, to remonstrate or plan, she heard the tread of his soft-soled shoes on the shiny floor.
Hey, Immy.
She'd forgotten the pleasant note to his baritone voice.
Hey, Owen.
He stepped into the room, and with him came the unmistakable scent of freesias.
I think I'll leave you two to it.
Jenny crept away. Owen Jackson from Chicago pulled the chair towards the bed and sat down, leaning forward to get a better view of Imogen's baby and to steady his shaking hands on the mattress.
So, he offered, sounding calm.
I had a second round of IUI just before Amsterdam, in case you were wondering. Imogen spoke softly, feeling a wave of emotion that she hadn't expected.
She's beautiful.
Wow. She loved hearing this.
Wow, indeed.
Why didn't you tell me you were pregnant? He whispered.
It was a lot to take in, a lot to think about. And we were done, and I figured I didn't want to make it any more complicated than it needed to be.
She spoke the truth, quietly.
What's her name?
Leah. Leah Mary.
Mary was my mother's name.
He smiled.
And my grand's. I brought you flowers.
I know. Thank you. She smiled gratefully, listening to the rustle of cellophane as he placed them on the table. The sweet smell of freesias invaded her nose. Would you like to hold her?
I think so. I'm a bit nervous.
He sounded it. Well, I am too. You'll be fine. Just hold her snugly and close to you. She'll be happy. Owen stooped and placed his arms under the body of the child and lifted her to his chest, where he cradled her against him.
She's so tiny.
Not really. About average. Imogen tried to calm the nerves that fluttered in her stomach.
There is nothing, absolutely nothing average about her.
His voice was thick with emotion.
Oh, my.
Hello, Leah.
Hey there, little girl.
Describe her to me. Imogen smiled as her hands toyed with the edge of the blanket.
Oh, Imogen.
Owen paused.
She has long fingers,
with tiny nails that I can see dancing over piano keys or holding a bow against a cello. Her skin is pale, like buttermilk, pure and soft. Her eyelashes, thick and dark, sit like tiny sleeping bugs on top of her rosy cheeks. She looks like goodness. She looks like happy. She looks like you. I forgot you have that wonderful knack of helping me to see things.
As compliments go, that's about a 10.
I've missed you, Imogen. I missed you, Owen. But you have to know that I am not looking for a man. Not looking for any more than I have right now. Being a new mum is a big adjustment.
I know. But the thing is, I love you, Immy. I do. I've tried not to since you called it a day, but I can't help it. I can't stop thinking about you, missing you. I've been so miserable.
The only thing that's made me happy is reliving that one day in Amsterdam. I want to be near you because I think I'll be less miserable being near you in Scotland than far away from you in Chicago. I'm not asking for anything other than that we be friends and take it from there. I want to be with you, Imogen. Only you. And if I can't be with you, then I'll be happy to be close to you for now. Imogen felt the flicker of love in her for this kindly man who travelled halfway around the world to hold her baby. I think Leah will be very lucky to have someone like you in her life. We both will.
That sounds like you might be willing to give us a chance.
I guess I am, she smiled. But we have to take it slowly, Owen, one day at a time. He reached forward and kissed her forehead, holding Leah tight.
I know. Because you are not that kind of girl, right?
That's right,
she laughed. Owen looked at the woman who held his hopes and dreams in her hands.
Someone once told me that you never know what's around the next corner, never know what twists and turns life might throw at you, but that you should always be ready to face whatever comes at you.
They did, she remembered.
And I'm ready to face this, Imogen. I won't abandon you or Leah, not ever. I'll never let you down. I'm going to stick around and see where this twist and turn might lead us.
I have a lot of love to give, and who knows what's gonna happen. Not you, not me, but that's gotta be the best start, right? The end.
You've been listening to Imogen's Baby, a short story by Amanda Prowse, narrated by Kathleen McCarran. Want to find out more about Whole Story Audiobooks? Visit us at www.wholestoryaudiobooks.co.uk. Here you'll find hundreds of best-selling titles, together with sound clips, narrator profiles, author interviews, and much more. Alternatively, contact us using the details on the cover to receive updates on new releases. Whole Story Audiobooks. The whole story as the author intended.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed